It's July 14th, 2011. Welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com. I'm Will Smith. It's Bastille Day, I suppose, from your French accent and things that you just said before the show.
That may have been the quickest that Tested Podcast ever went racist. Racist right out of the gate.
So I'm Will. Norm sitting to my left. Norm, you look like you're dressed up for some sort of date with Apple Store employees, maybe some high fives and cheering. Did that happen this morning or not?
I got all dressed up. I got my finest gingham, my favorite tie.
It's loosely knotted with the top button unbuttoned. Yep. And
serious,
button
but not
down.
Too serious.
All dressed up and no Apple Store to go to.
Can I ask you a question, Norm? Why do you wear button downs if you never button them down?
You mean never button them up?
They are never buttoned. The button
only,
down.
You never button the top button.
No, I'm not talking about the top button. I'm talking about the collar.
Oh, the collar. Okay, this was actually in this month's issue of GQ. The point of the button down collar.
That was a trap.
Norm doesn't leave the house without checking the fashion guides.
The point of the button on the collar.
Yes.
It was for old polo players when they would be in the wind and the collar would get blown in the wind.
Yes.
These days.
I thought it was to hold your tie down.
No. These days, it is optional. Some days you can have a button.
Really? I always thought it was kind of a faux pas to have the button.
I always felt that as well. But look at us. We're wearing t-shirts.
Yeah. To be fair, though, I mean, there's some shirts that do look better buttoned down and then some that look kind of dopey when they have the buttons and you don't button them down. But that seems to be okay.
It is a matter of preference. This is a mark of casual.
Okay. Gary Witt is wearing a pyro shirt in honor of today's TF2 TNT, assuming the TF2 server comes back up before
you have the worst luck with this kind of stuff.
Every fucking time. This time I even called Valve and said, hey, guys, do you want to come be on the show? And they're like, oh, yeah, totally. We'll come down and play. And B, can you please not push updates out during this two-hour window on Thursday when we have like 10,000 people watching? And I think we're probably good on both those fronts, except for our server host went down.
Oh, no.
Oh, so it's the host. It's not updates again.
The host is jacked.
Oh, that is bullshit.
Is that going to get fixed in time?
I don't know.
Because I dressed up as well. I put my best pyro. Mm-hmm.
Whether the TF2 server is running or not, we're gonna have a show. So
I mean, you just find another server to jump on.
Well, the guys at PC Gamer kindly offered to let us borrow their server.
That's very nice
afternoon.
Of them.
Yeah. So I thought that was very cool of them.
I'm excited. Team Fortress 2, my favorite game. So
it is my favorite game today. Yeah, the last decade for sure.
Norm, are you playing Soldier as usual?
I don't know if I'm playing today. We can talk about TF2 and getting
let's get back to this later. Yeah, yeah. Matt Bragg is sitting here. You're wearing a Whiskey Members shirt.
Yeah,
that's
playing.
Pretty cool.
Yeah,
I like that shirt.
I'm wearing you guys on my back.
It's not bad.
No.
And you're wearing your Tested Blockhead t-shirt.
I am. It's my new favorite t-shirt.
What is that, like plus five ego?
Something like that.
No. Early in the week, both of you guys
minus three charisma.
I understand it's very, obviously a very stylized interpretation, but do you think there's anything kind of perverse about walking around with a picture of yourself on a t-shirt?
I feel a little dirty every time I do it, and I like it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Didn't you say that you were like a pride parade or something and someone mistakenly thought that might be like a gay t-shirt?
That was Norm.
All right.
I walked around.
It wasn't a gay t-shirt. It was a get tested for AIDS t-shirt.
Okay.
Yeah. Feel like a heel
it was
now?
I mean, I can kind of see how in that context
you and your partner sent a good message.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, dude. We're tested. Bump.
Yeah.
This isn't helping
If people do take that message, that's also a good message.
Yeah, it's a good thing. So let's jump right into tech news. We got a lot of stuff to go over this week. First off, Sandy Bridge MacBook Airs, still not out.
Womp, womp.
Your rumor was wrong.
Poor Norm.
Everyone said the 14th. I got all dressed up for it. Woke up. I couldn't sleep last night. Really.
You had like night before Christmas.
I went to sleep at 2:30 in the morning because I could not sleep. It was on my computer. And I had tabs open. One for like tech blogs and one for store like apple.com, because if the store goes down, you know something's up.
Yeah. When you start checking the blogs hourly, you know that's it's truly imminent.
The thing I did, I woke up this morning, I just fired up Twitter because I knew it would be just exploding
all over the feed. Yeah.
So yeah, you got
6:30 in the morning.
Nothing.
I said maybe 8 a.m.
because people were feeling like today could be that there was a strong sense that today could be the day.
It was going to be a good day,
and today is now come and gone because it won't happen like midday.
No.
So by the time people listen to this. It could already be out.
are you holding
over the weekend? No, I mean,
4 or 3 years from now, maybe they're going through the back arc. Hey, what's it like in 2013? Send us a comment and let us know.
Yeah, well, I'll be dead. But the one thing is, there were rumors that came out earlier this week about backlighting also.
Backlit keyboards. Which was in the first generation MacBook Air.
Yeah, I love that.
Absent from the current generation and sorely missed. Yes. So very exciting that it might actually be back.
Really? Yeah. Do you not know how to touch type?
Well, I do, but it's still a nice feature.
I always turn that all the way down so it doesn't hurt my battery. It's the first thing I do when I get a new MacBook.
Okay.
Does it really hurt the battery that much?
Some people like
though?
It. Does not hurt the battery that much.
I don't care. It's the thought that counts.
Is this something we need to test?
Some people like maybe. Everyone is a professional, you know, touch typist like, you know, us guys.
That's true. Like I used to use a DOS keyboard, the one with no letters on it.
Beautiful.
Oh my god.
Which basically meant anytime IT came to my desk, they were just like, "You are such a fucking asshole."
Yeah. I have no trouble believing this story at all.
Yeah. Yeah,
you can still buy them, those classic MicroSwitch keyboards that are completely blank.
I love the MicroSwitch keyboard. Like I used it because I love the action on the keys, not because of the
Oh yeah, that tactile metallic click that you get. I mean, there's just nothing like it. Each key press is like a little mini orgasm.
Well, remind me of like an IBM, 286 IBM.
Yeah, those old metal keyboards that used to weigh half a ton. They still make them.
Those and the cockroaches will be all that survives the apocalypse.
They're great. I've been seriously considering getting one.
Do it. DOS keyboard is probably the best thing that I've bought for my computer. I almost contemplated bringing it with me to San Francisco.
Are those USB?
Those are USB. But you can also get, they come with a little adapter for a PS2 connector.
Yeah, I think the SteelSeries one, same thing.
Yeah. So the original DOS was just a rebadged Keytronics.
What, was it Keytronics?
Keytronics, okay. I believe, yeah. But I think the newer ones are actually manufacturing themselves, right?
I'm pretty sure.
Like that. I don't know. Anyway,
back to the more important thing at hand.
I do feel terrible for Norm because it's like he's had blue balls for the last week, and now every day it's like he's almost undergoing
you
the.
You should
the
look at our IM chat logs.
He's undergoing the tech version of the Vulcan Pon.
Yeah, your like, IM
he just cannot control himself any longer.
Your IM chat logs are a terrifying thought. No, I look at them every day.
11 and 13 inch, going back to 11, and then the big fear is. Because there are serial numbers kind of leaked for the models, new models.
Yeah.
There might only be two in-store models.
Oh, my God.
So you have the base 999.
Those SKUs, though, turned out to not be for the MacBook Air, so you're
no,
okay.
No, there were new ones.
Oh, there are new ones?
Yeah. Two Mac 11-inch and two 13-inch ones.
You know how I will occasionally have my tech anxiety and take it out on you over IM? I'm getting it now from Norton.
Yeah, now you know what my life is like.
It's miserable.
Everybody does this to me.
I feel sorry for you now.
Everybody calls me and they're like, I need to buy a new laptop and I want to spend $175 and it needs to be the best laptop ever in the world. And I'm like,
add a zero.
Oh, you poor bastard. So I just tell him to buy a Dell.
So
see, stock models, 2 gigs, probably the lowest clock one, 1.4 gigahertz, whatever the Sandy Bridge model will be, and it 64 gigs of SSD.
So let me summarize Norm's plight for you real quick. No. So Norm's decided he wants the 11-inch model, and that's all good, because the compact form factor is the way to go for portability. The problem is, A, he wants the machine – he does want to make upgrades, and he wants it set up a very certain way. On the other hand, he wants it day one out the door.
Yes.
So he's hoping that the stock high-end model is going to be close enough – to his specifications, he can just walk out the door with it because he doesn't want to have to wait. If you customize online, you can be waiting 6 weeks. You can be waiting weeks.
This is going to be but on the other hand, it's something he's going to keep for 2 or 3 years probably.
I said to him though, if it's hard drive space or whatever, you can just plug in a little hard drive.
It's the RAM. RAM is the one that I want upgrade.
Okay,
for.
So you want
and you
the
can't
RAM
upgrade
upgraded.
Anything in this machine,
right?
So.
You need the RAM upgraded.
I need 4 gigs of RAM.
So
I
what if the stock in-store model doesn't have the RAM you want, what do you
which
need?
The current case is the stock in-store model, I believe, is only either the 64 or the 128 gig, because that's the biggest markup that you can get in-store.
No, but RAM?
They don't have – I don't think there's a 4 gig model you can buy in-store for this.
Okay, so does
generation.
That mean you're going to have to wait?
Which means I might buy one and check Apple's return policy.
Oh, weeks.
That is like
dude.
The lowest
that
of
is
the
low.
Low.
I need
low.
It for Comic-Con.
You would at least pay
you don't need
fee.
It for Comic-Con. You told me this morning, and I said, you have a Chromebook.
I
oh, yeah, he needs it for Comic-Con.
Even a Chromebook probably weighs twice what a MacBook Air weighs.
Yeah.
The portability of the MacBook Air is really its strongest.
I'm tired of this topic.
Why?
Because we've talked about it for like 3 weeks running and it's still not out.
But there's a whole angle about how Norm is suffering. That gives
it
legs.
It's non-news.
Norm's tech masturbation does nothing for me. I need to just – I want to just move on.
I think it's great that he dressed up.
It's a little sad. I feel bad for him. I have pity in my heart. I don't usually feel that.
Standing outside the Mac store with a bouquet of flowers, looking all forlorn. She didn't show up.
There were no Apple employees cheered for me today.
Apple jilted me.
We should just go to the Apple store after this and see if we can get an Apple store employee to line up at the door, two or three of them, and just cheer at you as you walk out after buying.
Maybe you can stage some kind of sit-in.
Yeah.
Can I just watch you unload
myself
them?
For today until it comes out?
You're going to go on a hunger strike?
Real news.
Just to provide some actual useful information just to finish this off. I mean, what looks like it's going to happen, because I'm waiting as well, because I'm waiting for Lion. It looks at this point like Air and Lion will drop the same day. Mm-hmm. Because MacBooks, the Airs will obviously ship with Lion.
Yeah.
And they're not going to have MacBook Airs out there with Lion, and you can't go buy it for yours.
They might. Apple.
A friend of mine on Google Plus last night pointed out that the last three OS X updates have all dropped on a Friday.
OS X, you mean?
Friday is now looking like the... the prime candidate.
So you mean Bastille Day plus one?
Yes.
What is Bastille Day the French Revolution?
That's correct.
It's when they started chopping people's heads off.
It's when the peasants rose up against the French aristocracy.
Let them eat cake. No, we'll chop your head off instead.
Yes, correct.
That's pretty much what I know about French history right there. Yes. Also, the short guy with the hand in his jacket.
Do you know what the Bastille was?
The Bastille was a fortress slash prison.
Weapons.
Yes. Castle, right?
Correct.
Lots and lots.
Yeah, I saw the Three Musketeers too. Not the good one, the one with Kiefer Sutherland.
There's a new one coming out in 3D, just as Alexandre Dumas imagined it. I'm
so sure. Are they going to call it 3D Musketeers?
You think that would be the way they would go?
I put nothing past them at this point. The real big story this week is, I think, Netflix. I mean, there's been some tech news. Netflix outrage over their new pricing schemes surprises me.
So let's explain the pricing schemes.
Backstory, Norm.
Current pricing, a lot of people, both you guys, Gary and Will, because obviously you don't have streaming in Canada.
What? No. What are you talking
about?
We have streaming. We don't have DVDs.
Right. It's $8 a month just for streaming or just for DVDs.
Right.
$10 a month if you want both before the announcement. That's what I pay for because I want the DVDs and the streaming.
And you get what? Two DVDs out at once?
One DVD
out at a time. Okay.
I actually paid $12 because
it's a hybrid plan.
Sure. No more hybrid plan.
They have bifurcated the plans.
If you want both the DVD and streaming, it's $16.
Right. So for people who do have that plan where they want streaming and DVDs, they now have to either...
That's the price.
They either have to give up one half of it or basically pay double.
Yeah, pretty much.
And there has been extreme 60%. Outrage on the internet.
Okay.
Starting September 1st.
So here's the thing. Yeah, this starts on September 1.
The interesting thing is the reaction on Twitter. A lot of people I saw, who are on the same plan as me, they're going to dump DVDs, which is what Netflix kind of wants.
Well, the first thing I said to you, Norm, is this is just one more reason to finally leave DVDs behind.
I saw a bunch of people on my Twitter feed who actually said, I'm keeping DVDs. I had to think about whether I wanted to keep streaming.
So this is –
that's interesting.
What this is telling me is that there are some people that are not as lazy as I am and don't have a copy of Hot Fuzz. It's been sitting on their desk waiting to go back to Netflix since like 2009.
That's part of the reason why I quit the DVDs is because they just sat around.
Right.
Yeah. People like Anna, four DVDs or three DVDs, whatever she has, and watches them regularly.
She is very high turnover.
I think
she's the other end of the scale.
And also if you look at the selection, like if you had, based on the selection today, if you had to cut one, I would be actually tempted to cut streaming if I had to.
I think
just
via
the selection.
I think that's mad.
The thing is, I'm just as likely to go back. I watch a lot of TV on Netflix these days, especially during the summer when TV is shit. I will, like Gina and I will go through, and we started watching Lost the other day. I think we're going to watch either The Wire or The Shield next. We haven't decided which. And just
can't really go wrong with either.
Yeah, and watch a whole run of a TV show while the TV doldrums are on in the summertime.
Great plan. Yeah. Catch up on those great shows that you missed.
And if you try to do that, like watching TV with Netflix discs is a disaster because you get like three episodes per disc and then you have to send it back and either you have to use two slots in your plan to constantly have them coming.
And there's those gaps, right, where you get into the flow of the show and then there's got to be a break while you wait for the disc.
And with the attention span I have, like a three-day turn on the disc, it's never going to – I'm done. I'm out. I'm never watching Lost again.
You want Netflix where it's all just one endless stream of episodes.
Yeah. I just want to be able to hit key, next episode, next episode, next episode, next episode.
Yeah, brilliant.
Now, on the flip side though, I mean the one factor that a lot of people pointed out on Twitter was that they like using Netflix for more recent releases, which is why they like the DVDs.
So,
and that's something that doesn't even exist in Canada. That's not something that I even thought
of. You can't wrap your head around that.
You see, that's nonsensical to me as well because, A, Netflix is not really the greatest place to get your new releases for a number of reasons. One, many studios now have Netflix on a 30-day hold.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you've got to wait 30 days after it's released –
That's why Redbox and On Demand, they say
30 days before Netflix. Right. So, you know, Warner Brothers and other studios make you wait 30 days. The other thing is with new releases, they are limited by the physical numbers of discs they have. A high demand, when the new Harry Potter movie comes out on Blu-ray, you may have to wait until the next guy in front of you is done.
Oh, absolutely.
In an age of digital media, the fact that I'm having to wait for someone to send their disc back seems so archaic to me.
Well, and so the way I always think about this, and this is how I ended up with 500 or 600 DVDs or whatever it is that I have, is that if it's something I'm going to see in the theaters and I just wait until it's out for home viewing, then I'm happy to pay $15 for the DVD. And now with the demand, with the on-demand from Comcast, or since I have a TiVo that doesn't work with Comcast on-demand, I just can pay $3 or $4 from Apple TV and watch it immediately. And I mean, that works
exactly.
Well.
And that's the
other, I'm comfortable paying
that. The other part of my argument is if you've got an Apple TV or an Xbox 360 or a PlayStation at home or a Boxy Box, whatever, right. Roku, whatever that provides one of these services, then you've got all the latest releases day and date. You don't have to wait 30 days. You don't have to just wait for the disc to show up. You've got a full buffet of the new release. I was looking at Apple TV last night, Source Code and Deathly Hallows and, you know, all the latest movies that are out.
Source Code's out now?
Yep.
Oh, good to know.
On TV? Really?
It's not. I think it's not on DVD. It's on, but it's actually.
But that's
out.
For purchase.
No,
not
rental.
Oh, rental. Yeah. Okay. Ooh.
Fully rentable, and you know, it's good if you want. If you like to watch a lot of new release movies, you're going to end up paying more because you're paying for each movie individually. But it's overall just a better way to do it.
Well, the thing is, with the number of movies I'm watching these days, which is probably two a month that I'm paying new releases.
Yeah.
Then you know, I'm going back and exploring catalog stuff with Netflix streaming that I've never ever seen before, like stuff from the 70s and 60s and 80s.
Yeah.
And
I would say more often than not, I find that movies I really want to see from the 70s and 80s or 90s are not in streaming.
But I probably already bought the ones that I really want to see on DVD years ago and they were $5.
Because the obscurity factor, I think, is something that a lot of people were championing with the DVDs, is that they can
get no doubt.
And those are low demand, too. Those aren't going
to
be bad.
The thing is, it's very rare that I go to Netflix Instant hoping to see a specific movie and then going, oh, they don't have it. I usually just go, okay, Netflix, what have you got for
me? Yeah, that's
and
the way I do something. It, too. Yeah. I mean, I treat it like I used to do the video store. I'll just stay around, walk around until I see a good-looking cover and then read the description, watch a preview, and play.
Absolutely.
And the other thing is I divide movies into really three tiers, right? So like there's stuff, maybe four tiers. There's stuff I go to see in the theaters. God help me, Transformers 3 was one of those.
Right.
There's stuff that I will watch multiple times. So a lot of times these are like goofy comedies that we'll put on while we're playing a board game or something like that, like Anchorman or whatever.
That's tricky because if you put on something too good, the board game gets ruined.
That is only when you're there. The you're not allowed to sit and watch.
It happens in my house all the time.
We pulled it
all
off last
time.
Night.
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't there.
I know.
So Norm is, when there's a screen in the room, Norm has a hard time focusing on something that's analog, is what I've found over the
well,
years.
As we see every week, right. see every week on the podcast, right. He gazes into his iPhone.
Right. So, and then there's the stuff that I'll watch once. So a lot of time dramas come into this category, right? Because like if it's a kind of thriller or a drama or something like that, you don't need to watch that movie four times, maybe twice.
Right.
But definitely not more than that.
And also just movies that are so good and so great that you feel like you want to own
like
it.
The Departed I had no problem buying on Blu-ray because that is a fucking great movie and I watch that once a year.
My example of that was Apocalypto, which I rented, on Blu-ray from Netflix and was so blown away by how unexpectedly good it was. I instantly bought it.
You know, Dave Snyder is a big Apocalypto fan too. You should talk to him about
I don't know anyone who's seen it who isn't. I mean, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's
film.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was quite good.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's the Netflix stuff. I think that a lot of this is blown out of proportion. Part of it is that, you know, this is the old adage is that it's always hard to raise prices, right? Nobody – you can always lower prices. Nobody complains about that. But raising prices, it gets bad. And I mean, it makes sense for Netflix to separate the people who are paying for discs and who they have that disc expense from the people who they're paying for rights access to. Because what they're going to do is save a ton of money for all the people that have the disc plans that don't have any streaming that have streaming access but don't use it that they have to pay for.
Yeah.
From their streaming licensing.
Hopefully they're doing this not just to cover costs because they forecast that they'll be tougher to renew deals, but hopefully that this will give them more money to make better deals.
Yeah,
so their streaming selection is actually wider. So
original content, all that stuff.
Original content side. So I can actually be comfortable getting rid of.
There's
the
a couple of things I want to say about this. One is why I think the argument is overblown against the price hike.
Yeah.
And the other one is why I think Netflix is actually doing this, which I'm going to borrow from a point that someone else made on the internet. It's overblown because Netflix, I think people have become a little bit spoiled by Netflix. And there's a little bit of that internet entitlement culture where we used to think everything should be free. Now we think everything should be super cheap. for $8 a month, the service you get from Netflix and the service you'll continue to get from Netflix, yeah, even under the new pricing scheme, is a fantastic value. I mean, it's a tremendous value. And people are so spoiled by that now that now, as Netflix inevitably needs to raise prices because they are going to get squeezed by content providers. The bigger the audience gets, the more they're going to have to pay to distribute this content. They have to stay ahead of that game. And as Norm says, they do need the money to invest to make the service better and start providing, creating their own original content because they're in that game now. So people just don't like it when the service that they were getting for a ridiculously cheap price is now being readjusted to a more sensible price.
Yeah, of course.
So I think a lot of this, a lot of these tantrums and complaints about the Netflix, like, very childish, and I don't agree with it at all.
It'll work itself out. I mean, that will work itself out. People, yeah.
The other point, which they said, Engai Kroll tweeted something today, which is a point that a blogger made that he found and thought he said it was the best explanation for why this is happening. Yeah, and I agree with it. Is that if you look at the way that Netflix's content partnership deals work, the amount they pay is based on the size of their audience.
Right.
So but there's a specific point here. Number of people who have streaming available is counted in terms of
everybody who gets
discs.
How much
they have to pay. Yeah. So that's the thing. So everyone who gets discs, whether or not even though the streaming plan is bundled in, even though they may not use streaming, that gets counted against Netflix in terms of what they have to pay the content providers.
This is exactly what I said. Where's the point?
The point I'm making is, by splitting the two apart, Netflix is not having to pay the content providers for streaming viewers that they don't actually serve.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, they're saving money.
So that makes
on both sides.
A lot of sense. Yes.
Yeah.
So that makes a lot of sense for them.
Yeah. I think that is exactly the point. I mean, that's why they're doing this.
So all the people that are complaining, shut up. You're still getting a tremendous value. And as I said before, I think that the Blu-ray argument, I mean, Blu-rays are great. But the whole idea of like waiting and going to the mailbox now already to me seems as old fashioned as going to the Blockbuster store did.
Yeah.
So
have any of you ever used Redbox or one of those services?
Anna uses it a lot. Instead of using like Apple TV, it's going to the store.
So that's her premium service, basically.
Yeah. I mean, it's a nice compromise in the sense that it's at the store that you're probably already going to get your groceries or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, you know, returning and what is no hassle because you got to make that trip anyway.
Somebody who has really, really terrible taste in movies signed up for a Redbox account with my email address attached to it.
Oh, no.
And it is inexorable crap that they're watching.
It's why would they use your email address?
Because they're nitwits and don't know that they didn't want to put their real email address in, because my personal email address, which is, you know, uses my name and it's very common formatting on Gmail.
Yeah.
You know, they thought, oh, I'm renting Wild Wild West. I'm going to put Will Smith in.
Oh, is that how it started?
And then they kept using that account over and over again. Oh,
dear.
So,
but wait, when he tried to sign up with the email, why didn't Redbox say there's already? Oh,
I'm not a Redbox user. Okay. This happens a lot.
Right.
So anyway, yeah, it's nothing but Kevin James and Adam Sandler movies going through this poor bastard's account. Makes me sad.
You know, if that's what makes him happy.
Yeah, I guess. Okay. Another big service hit today. In the U.S. for Americans. Right. Yeah, Spotify is here now.
This is the big story this morning. Everyone's talking about
this. Right. Well, because they were very clever about how they doled out the initial invites. And they gave them to people with iCloud.
Well, no. Originally, you were able to sign up because they announced a week ago that Spotify would be coming to the U.S.
Yes.
And there was a website. You know, Dinty Moore loves Spotify.
Yeah.
That was on the sign-up page.
So does Mark Zuckerberg.
So does Mark Zuckerberg, too. Yeah.
And Demi Moore.
That Dinty Moore. Yes.
Oh, you call her Dinty Moore. Oh, yes. That's a joke. I see.
I call her Dinty Moore, and Norm has now co-opted my joke. It's a Letterman joke from 1993.
Yeah, I got tweets. Once I tweeted Spotify, Dinty Moore loves Spotify, I got spam.
Right. Dinty Moore is also canned stew.
Okay. I did not know that, actually.
Yes, that's why the joke is funny.
I sounded funny.
Yes.
Pop culture gaps.
Yes.
Anyway, the news came out yesterday. I think New York Times had a story, and the reports were that most of the people, even all of them, who signed up for the pre-notification would get an invite.
Okay.
Didn't happen this morning.
No. Yeah.
8 a.m. EST. People, I know I've signed up using like various email accounts last week.
Yeah.
Did not happen. So who got in?
People with high clout, yo.
I knew it'd pay off one day. I knew.
Yeah.
Perks.
I can't.
All that thought leading has finally reaped its reward.
I feel dirty specializing talking about this.
And broadcasting.
But it said we had to disclose if we're using the service from a clout perk.
Yeah, we said that.
Yeah.
I mean, I said, hey, yo, do you want some clout and get Spotify?
Well, so here's the thing. I now, as a quote-unquote clout ambassador,
Yes.
I now have the ability to send out invites to my friends, but yes, it's not just an invite for Spotify. It's
you
an
get
invite
a premium
to Cloud,
free month,
which will also get you through to Spotify. Yeah. So,
and they all get premium free premium months too.
This not all right of them. We do because
the people we invite
people
do too.
Oh,
so this is not a new thing for Clout. Clout has this perk system and they've done other offers in the past, but this is really, I think, a real coup for Clout because
it broke Clout kind of. I mean, it was
I couldn't
for
get
a while
on this morning, you know, do my daily Clout check to make sure I'm still comfortably ahead of Norm.
So we've talked about Clout for a while.
But I'm just saying this is a great boost for them. This is will drive a lot of great users day to their site because people want Spotify and they're going to have to go to Clout to get it.
Yeah, for at least for a few more hours.
Yeah.
But aside from the Clout stuff, Spotify is out now. Have any of you spent any significant time with it?
No. Well,
it just came out this morning. How significant could the time have been?
Well, you could have used it via, you know, proxy or something.
I did. I've installed it. I used it a bit this morning. I installed the iPhone app also.
I have it on all of my computers and my iPhone.
Yeah.
I have it on Android and iPhone.
I listened to some Britney Spears.
Okay.
I'm using it right now.
Like old Britney Spears or new Britney Spears?
The new album. Because I was just clicking on the What's New page.
So here's the way this works. It's a little bit different than the other stuff that's out there in that you can connect to you connect it to your library on local machines. Then you can play those music songs anywhere.
So you can just use it as your music player.
Even if it's like obscure random stuff that's not in Spotify.
Right. So I have a playlist on my iTunes called Current, which is just all the music that I want to be listening to. Stuff that I like on any particular time. And I synced that via the Spotify app on my phone.
Which is very – that like all those curated playlists that I've had on 12 different machines and it's impossible to transfer them back and forth because iTunes sucks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Love being able to transfer
playlists
between
machines. If I want to now use Spotify just as my music player rather than the default iPod app.
But you
phone.
Need – that's for premium.
Oh, is that for premium?
You can't use the iPhone app unless you have a premium account.
So this is where this is where it breaks down. There's three levels of account. There's free, there's standard, and there's premium.
Yes.
Free is free. Standard is $5 a month. Premium is $10 a month.
Well, there's also something called unlimited.
I think unlimited and premium are the same thing.
Okay.
I'm not sure about that. This is where my knowledge of Spotify completely implodes because prior to today, we couldn't even get to the pages that describe the different
types of
accounts.
We're just now learning it ourselves.
We'll talk about this short, I'm sure, more next week after we actually had time to test it out. But it is pretty neat in that it works like a locker service in some ways. But there's also a unlimited streaming component as well.
Of all
if
the
you
latest,
pay, if you have the right
the
level of account.
Or you can eat music from all the latest releases.
Now the selection is going to weigh heavily toward new releases and not some more obscure stuff because it's actually not done through SoundExchange. Spotify made deals with individual labels. And so that's how they're going to make money.
Okay.
So they're rates
are probably
lower.
Bananas.
Then someone like Pandora. Pandora actually just goes through SoundExchange, the intermediary. And so they play the standard U.S. rate. Spotify probably has a special rate.
Well, I understand Spotify is incredibly popular in Europe. People are very excited that it's here. What I don't get, because I haven't used any of these other services very much, is how is this different to, say, Audio or Last.fm? What does this do to the other side?
The difference is the combination between locker service and subscription service. So Audio, you can play all the music that they have on their servers that you want, you know, for your monthly fee.
Right.
But if you want to, say, add some obscure band that you listened to in college that never had mainstream success.
Right.
And you want to be able to listen to their album on that service, your SOL. It just doesn't work. If it's not on the service, you can't listen to it. With Spotify, you can upload tracks that you own and share them between computers. You can listen to them offline, all sorts of stuff.
Okay.
It's kind of like a combination of Audio or Zune or Pandora or whatever.
With a desktop.
Or with Amazon Cloud or Google Music or iCloud or one of those types of things.
Okay.
So I'm really interested to spend some more time with this. I mean, I think you guys, it's no secret that I've been using Audio quite a bit lately. I'm fond of that. So I'm interested to see how it compares to that specifically. Norm, there's a good piece on the site right now that explains the kind of key differences between the different services that are available. And one of the things that as I was using this really occurred to me this morning is that, you know, if Microsoft had released Zune clients for Android and iOS and Mac – last year or the year before or the year before that is a service that could have really taken off because it's kind of similar, except instead of being a locker service where you can upload stuff, you just get to keep 10 or 12 songs or something a month for your $10 a month, which is a good deal.
I would have been all over that. Its biggest competitor is going to be Audio.
Well, kind of. Its other biggest competitor is going to be iCloud.
Yes, that too.
But I wonder with stuff like Audio and Spotify being cross-platform – how sticky iCloud and Google Music
but
are going
but
to
iTunes,
be.
But iTunes stroke iCloud isn't really competitive because it yeah. doesn't offer the subscription music service that these other ones
well,
do.
That's true.
And that, I mean, this is not new to anyone who uses RDO or Last.fm or any of these services, but the greatest, I mean, more so RDO and Spotify in Europe is, I'd forgotten how cool it is to have that all-you-can-eat buffet subscription service. People that use Zune have this as well. On yeah. iTunes, you forget this. You can listen to a minute or 30 seconds of a new song and sample it.
Oh, yeah.
But it's so great. Like, okay, let's say, for example, I went on Spotify, and the first thing I saw was new releases. Patsy Cline has a new remastered, you know, greatest hits type album yeah. out. I was able to click on it and just listen to the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's all just
and it's there.
Yeah, it's yeah. great.
And so, like, and that when that works with stuff like Turntable – it like it saves you pay $10 a month, but like how much money have you spent on Turntable because of Turntable in the last
about 50 bucks
months? Yeah, so had you been subscribed to RDO or Spotify or something like that would have been $20.
Yes, except again, I'm still not ready to make that leap where I don't actually own
you
anything.
Want to collect.
I can only access that music as long as I'm willing to continue to subscribe to their service.
Well, that's true.
It makes me a little bit uneasy.
That's why I right. actually still buy CDs. Which probably puts me in the – yeah, because I can rip them. I mean, that doesn't stop me from buying things on iTunes.
The music streaming situation is a little grimmer in Canada, right?
See, so buy CDs? But I don't know if that would stop me, though.
Where do you buy CDs?
Wherever they're – I don't know.
Use CD stores?
In here, I think most people buy CDs from Amazon.
Amazon, yeah.
And people – Amazon, the appeal of getting the MP3 is that the Amazon cloud.
I kind of remember the last time I bought a CD.
I know exactly what the last CD I bought was not as Lucky Surf.
You've talked about this on the podcast.
Not a Surf Lucky.
I was going to buy the Game of Thrones soundtrack on CD because I thought for a moment that it was only going to be available as CD, and then it was on iTunes, and I just went and got that.
I was really bummed because I went to the Spotify catalog expecting to see tons of Hoff, and there was not so much – you know, since it's a European service, I assumed it would be nothing but Hasselhoff all the way down.
Because that's – because
Hasselhoff's as far as the eye can see.
He straddles the European music scene.
What I know of the European music scene is it's basically Coldplay, Radiohead, that girl from Iceland, and Hasselhoff.
Royksopp?
No, the other York? One. Well, her, York. Too. I feel like she's more popular in America. America.
Who's the girl from Iceland, then?
The blonde girl that sang about chewing gum. Annie.
What?
Let's move on.
Oh, my goodness.
Again, Will's questionable
Adele? Music. You're really not making yourself
other good. Topics. AT&T finally is rolling out real 4G.
LTE.
Is it a phone?
Unclear.
No, it's not a phone.
It's LTE hotspots.
Hotspots.
So they are releasing a range of LTE hotspots. But I guess my point would be, if you want an LTE hotspot, wouldn't you just get a Verizon one?
Well, this is the beginning. This is how it starts. Because Verizon rolled out the hotspots first too.
Yeah.
Because they have a lot shorter dev time than phones. So I guess what we can say from this is if this is what we learned from other carriers holds, is that in 3 to 6 months we'll start seeing some LTE phones that aren't this HSPA plus bullshit.
Right, because we've talked before about how everyone calls their phones 4G, but only LTE is the true 4G. Yeah.
There can be only one.
33% of iPhone owners think that they are on 4G.
Now that was a very scary statistic, I thought.
Well, 33% of iPhone owners probably also think that it's powered by gnomes.
Do you think that's because it had the 4 in its name that they got confused?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Definitely, because you had the 3G and the 2G. And
I can't wait until I get on 5G.
The iPhone 3G was actually 3G.
Oh, I know. But I think that was just the logical conclusion that a lot of people made was, you know, the 2G was 2G.
And AT&T/T-Mobile had done a ton of advertising with their 4G logoing.
Yeah, it was confusing for a while there.
That's not really a story other than that. EA spent a little bit of cash this week.
How much cash?
$750 million up to $1.3 billion, depending on how the payouts go.
And, you know, it's supposed to be a split between cash and stocks. Vast majority of that is cash.
Yeah.
It's very small amount of stock options.
So they spent that acquiring Jeff Green and Bjorn the Unicorn, pretty much.
Did you see his Origin tweets yesterday? He had some funny Origin tweets.
What did he say?
He said, "Oh, just checking out Origin. It's so great." The hashtag was.
He's very quickly adopted a much sunnier attitude towards everything coming from EA.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what happened. I think he's excited about getting a free copy of Mass Effect 3. But EA buying PopCap is a big deal because it seems like they bought them primarily for their iOS,
their
massive market share on iOS.
So,
and some huge brands.
Yeah.
Oh.
Quiet,
oh.
Chloe.
Chloe agrees.
Chloe agrees.
Yeah, Chloe is
hates the zombies.
Chloe's pissed off about EA. You know, she's with Jeff Green.
So I think
let's remember some of what PopCap has in its IP catalog. Plants vs. Zombies,
Bejeweled.
Which is on Facebook.
Bookworm Adventures.
Never mind about iOS, the most lucrative version of Bejeweled.
Bejeweled Blitz.
Blitz on Facebook.
Mm-hmm. I had a dark period of my life when I was just brutally addicted to Bejeweled Blitz on Facebook.
Yeah, what if PopCap can't replicate the success? I mean, they've had three big hits: Bejeweled, Peggle, and Plants vs. Zombies.
There's no reason to
PopCap pisses excellence.
There's no reason to suggest they can't keep.
Zuma, I did not think Plants vs. Zombies
Bookworm,
was going to
Bookworm. What was the very first one before Bejeweled?
Oh, I don't remember. They are a true multi-platform company.
Yeah.
I mean, the games that they make work great on phones and tablets. They work great on Xbox, you know, Live Arcade and places like that. They work great on Facebook. I mean, they can iterate these games across all the platforms where they're going to make all of the money.
They're good games.
Yeah.
I mean, it works because the secret of PopCap has always been that they take real games and integrate them with kind of cute, casual art styles.
So what's EA's strategic thinking here? What are they spending $750 million for?
I think what they're going to do is make Skinner machines that have PopCap art.
I don't understand what you're saying.
Micropayment, Farmville type games.
Oh, okay.
This is their shot. This is their – Playfish hasn't worked out. I mean, it seems like they bought Playfish at the very peak of its value.
Yeah, we've heard very little about Playfish since EA bought them.
They've done nothing. They had a couple of good games. EA bought them when they were on the way up, and then they immediately started going down.
Yeah.
I think that we're going to see – this is EA's shot at Zynga. They're never going to develop Zynga-style games in-house. I think that I hope that we don't see Skinner. You know, Skinner machines. It's the press the button and either a pellet comes out. You press the wrong button, you get a shock.
Right.
And the mice very quickly learn to just start jamming the
people
shit
who play
out
Farmville
of
are mice.
Yeah.
Yeah. People that. Yeah.
That's what you say. Not
the micropayment model.
Well, there's good micropayments, bad micropayments. But yeah.
I just hope this doesn't turn PopCap evil. Because PopCap seems like a pretty cool company.
I just
have
they're
going to not be at PAX giving out, you know, those sunflower stickers and those traffic cone hats.
Oh, they gave traffic cones?
Yeah.
I'm so excited about PAX.
And you could get a zombie makeover.
I don't want a zombie makeover. I've done that before.
To be fair, I mean, I'm a little more optimistic. Simply in the fact that
Canadians always are, aren't they?
Well, I mean, in this case, I mean, I wrote a little bit about the Playfish acquisition back when that happened. And I mean, EA's mobile games right now are really sort of just, you know, mobile half-assed ports.
Battlefield Bad Company 2 mobile.
Pretty much. It's you know, mobile ports of their current IP. And I feel that if PopCap can at least help bolster that and create like very, very decent mobile games
absolutely.
That aren't social bullshit. I feel like Playfish and PopCap are very, very separate, even though they play in the same sort of realm.
Oh.
And I'm hoping that.
And EA is traditionally in the mobile space has just licensed really popular games like Risk and Tetris for mobile. Mm.
Like, put it this way, if some of the talent at PopCap could be put forth to making, I don't know, like a really, really decent mobile game based on some sort of, you know, EA IP, I might be fine with that. As long as it just doesn't suck. And that has traditionally been the case with most of EA's, you know, IP games.
It's very optimistic of you, Mark.
Hey, you know what?
Dante's Backyard versus
Plants versus Dante.
Yeah. Well, don't be afraid that PopCap employees are going to bail because they're $50 million set aside.
Rolling in the money.
Wow, $50 million whole dollars out of $1.3 billion?
Yeah, to retain employees, extra bonuses. You
don't that's pretty good. Okay, $50 million goes a long way when you're talking about salaries, I guess.
How many pea shooters do you think that'll buy them?
I just want to know if we're going to have Plants versus Zombies versus, you know, Ultima.
Plants vs. Zombies,
I mean,
2012.
I think the smartest thing that EA can do is just leave them alone and leave them to continue to be a huge profit generator.
Yeah, I my guess would be, you know, despite some stuff that's happened on the more hardcore game side, I would assume that that's
the case. Look, the reason why EA buys PopCap instead of just trying to set up their own PopCap type operation is that PopCap can do what they can't.
Right.
So to buy them and then try to kind of repaint everything as EA would defeat the object.
The difference is that now you'll be able to get an unlockable Madden football game player. Like the guy in the football player in Plants vs. Zombies will now be like Reggie Bush.
I kind of hate that idea.
Yeah.
I don't want that.
No, I don't want that either. Maybe they can actually pay for the Michael Jackson rights now, though.
Ooh.
See, that could be a good thing that comes out of this. I don't know.
So that disco zombie becomes Thriller Zombie.
Now, so that was a crazy gaming story. This is another crazy gaming story that was going around last week about Windows 8 being able to play Xbox games.
Kill me.
Let's talk about this story went around everywhere. I mean, it was all over the place, and it is dumb.
I posted it on Google Plus, and it created an epic thread. Everyone was going crazy.
Fucking stupid.
How many people were pro and how many people were, this is the stupidest thing I've ever heard?
Here's the thing. It was a mix, but most people were excited.
The news came out of, I think, translation?
Yeah, it was some bullshit sources. Like, it wasn't even...
Yeah. But and their logic was, if you go to gamesforwindows.com, the website that used to be the hub for buying games, it's now Xbox Live.
They folded Games for Windows into Xbox, which a lot of the people on the PC side kind of feel like is the beginning of the end. So they're not too excited about
that. So if you try to look it optimistically...
The beginning of the end of Games for Windows Live was when the first Games for Windows Live shipped, and it was Halo 2.
Yes, that was very sad.
That was the
DX10 required.
Yeah, you had to have Vista to play a four-year-old Xbox One game in 2006 or 2007.
It was grim.
So nobody likes Games for Windows Live. We've established that at length on this podcast. It is a bad product. It has been consistently bad. The only good thing that's come out of it, the gamepad support in every modern PC game.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why people were so excited about that news, and it did proliferate all over the internet, even though it never was never was really a legit source for it, was because it is kind of a huge idea. It's a big – if that was something Microsoft were actually to do, that would be a kind of a game changer in many ways. So people were excited about at least speculating on it.
But why – I have – at this point in my life, I have bought probably three Xboxes. Two of them are still functioning.
Yeah.
I have one in my office and one in my living room. So I can play – when Gina wants to watch TV on the big TV, she can watch TV and I can go play games in the office and nobody suffers. Why would I want to do that on my PC? I just – I fundamentally don't understand why I would want to take – I mean were they saying that you'd be able to upscale stuff and it would look better?
Who knows?
Or there'd be AA or the frame rate would be better, or was it just going to – I mean it doesn't even make sense.
From a technical perspective, I mean if you look at the 360 as well, it couldn't even emulate Xbox One games that well. Like it chugged along with a lot of them. It was half-baked.
Yeah, there's low-level differences. It's a RISC-based PowerPC processor in the Xbox 360. It's like a Radeon 97 9800 core somewhere in there, or 200 or something like that. I mean, it just doesn't make sense on any level. I can't imagine why people are like, oh, man, okay, let's post this.
More backstory as well is that there was another post that pointed out, I guess in some Windows 8 beta code, there was references to the Xbox 360. And they weren't really conclusive and did not really point to anything at all related to games.
I mean, you can make the argument that if people really want to play Xbox 360 games, an Xbox is $199.
Right. It's only going to get cheaper.
Yeah.
They're giving the damn things away with new HPPCs. So, I mean.
So oh, that's right.
What Microsoft out and out denied this at some point.
Okay, right? So it's a non-story, but for a day or two, the internet was all a frenzy. All a Twitter.
Don't believe everything you read, kids.
Unless you read it from us.
Everything we say is true. I mean, well, this is – you'll note that we didn't run one of those stories. We ran a story saying, hey, this is dumb. Don't believe it. The other stupid story, and this one actually seems like it might be true, is that the next release of the PS3 – so we've had there have been like 12 different PS3s, and there's a – if you think buying Xboxes is confusing, buying PS3s is even more so because some of them don't have enough USB ports and some of them there's an actual PS2 in there for backwards compatibility.
Some of them's emulated.
Some of them don't have any backwards compatibility at all.
Hardware emulated, software emulated.
Yeah, different size hard drives. The USB ports on the front is the big thing for me because like the old school ones have four and the new ones only have two and it doesn't make any sense. That's okay. Now we're getting into real stupid land with the next version of the PS3, which – Engadget is saying won't be able to play Blu-rays over component anymore because of AACS licensing regulations.
That's confirmed. Mm-hmm. Sony got back to him.
So yeah. That is – I mean I have an HDMI TV now, so I'm not as pissed off about it as I would have been a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
However, it does not make sense to me at all to release something that is a Blu-ray player / game console that only works via HDMI.
Keep the studios happy.
Well, they are the studio, so, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Hey, are you happy, you? Yeah, I'm happy. How are you doing?
Feedback loop.
Yeah, I find that ridiculous.
And here's the thing. The PS3 still doesn't come with an HDMI cable. Buy the cable.
The new one really doesn't?
No way.
Oh, man. So lame.
So wait, what does it ship with? It ships with cables, and then Sony has to say in the box, you can play games with this, but...
I'm sure it's going to happen today. I'm sure.
I think Gary has
to. Norman and I are having our own little private breaking news developments.
Is the MacBook, is the store down?
Well, the two things have happened.
Okay.
We interrupt this story. First of all, Apple's, is the Mac store down?
No, the downloads page for Mac OS X is down. The downloads page.
Okay.
They're moving stuff over to
what?
Moving to App Store.
Okay.
So they're prepping the App Store.
All right.
To get ready for Lion.
And the other story that Norm is very excited about, if you were listening to what we said at the top of the conversation, Mac Rumors just posted a rumor. Updated MacBook Air may offer minimum of 128 gigabyte solid state drive and 4 gigabyte RAM, which is exactly what
that is exactly what I want. That is a machine I will go out and buy the moment I have money.
That's very compelling.
Yeah. Back to non-breaking news. Amazon, rumors that Amazon's going to release an Android tablet this year, a cheap one.
Well, that's been a very strong rumor for a while, hasn't it?
Yes, I think. But there have been more developments in the rumor front. Does anybody know anything about this? I think that this is a no-brainer given the Kindle situation and their investment in Android.
Yeah, Wall Street Journal reported it. Foxconn's going to make it.
Do you think they would leverage the Kindle? Do you think they'd call it like the Kindle with Android? Because that's like two power-packed brands that you get all.
No,
I don't think they want to taint Kindle, because Kindle is a brand that people feel really good about.
Right.
And Android is kind of up and down. I mean, it's something that a lot of people really love and a lot of people don't like a lot.
Right. They obviously would have a dedicated Kindle app within it.
Yeah.
As all tablets do.
Yeah. I mean, I more see it as the Amazon Android tablet or the Amazon tablet with Android.
And here's the thing. It taps right into their app store.
I was going to say, does it give it actually like any legitimacy now? Will people actually?
I think more and more people are using the Amazon app store.
Have you used it?
I can't.
Oh, because you're in Canada.
Yeah.
So I have to say that the Amazon app store experience is significant. Aside from the actual purchasing, which requires multiple steps because of core underpinnings of Android, I find the Amazon App Store to be much better curated and much better, easier to find stuff that's actually good than
the official
Google market, App Store. Yeah.
I think I may have predicted this before, but I'll do it again. I think that if Amazon, as they almost certainly are, does do an Android tablet, I think it will be a huge success. And I think it will probably end up as the flagship Android tablet. That's my guess.
I mean, I think that's the next best thing to Google making a Nexus tablet.
Basically.
Yeah. Mm.
And I'm actually surprised that Google hasn't done that.
I mean, the Moto Zoom was essentially the Nexus tablet, but developed by Moto.
Yeah. SD card still doesn't work on it.
Yeah, I think you're going to have to take it to the ship it back?
No, that's software.
That's 4G.
4G, you have to ship it back. Well, still isn't available. Oh, speaking of the Kindle, Kindle with ads, ad-supported Kindle, 3G version, another $25 price drop.
Really?
With the Nook, pretty much. $139.
All right.
AT&T is sponsoring.
But we're still waiting for that magic $99.
Yeah. But this is a 3G
only
one.
A couple of days away.
Oh, yeah. I think time for the holidays. And of course, the other reason why the Amazon tablet could do very well is the same reason, part of the reason at least the Kindle did well, is that Amazon.com is going to be the number one product on the splash page every day until
of course.
10 million
copies. You won't know. No one that uses Amazon will not know that there's an Amazon tablet.
I mean, and that's, of course, the beauty of Amazon is they have the best, storefront, product placement that you can imagine.
Well, and they'll call Stephen King and they'll send him one and they'll have quotes from every author.
But they also have a good
movie auteurs. And
they have a good history of creating not only good hardware, but a good software experience, too. And that's where a lot of people get hung up on Android. Like, oh, I don't know if I really want to get this Acer Android tablet. Like, they make good UIs. Motorola Zoom with the stuff on top. No.
Well, and the thing is, with their Kindle app, with the music app, and with the App Store, they have consistently shown that they can build a really compelling experience on whatever mobile platform they want to do. So even if you're an iOS user, you're familiar with Kindle app, you're familiar with the Amazon Store stuff on iPhone or iPad. I mean, you're going to feel comfortable. People who are even not feeling comfortable about Android now may be more interested in it.
Yeah, because Amazon is a brand where people feel, safe and reliable. Since we're talking about tablets also, we're talking about WebOS and TouchPad recently. Your argument is that HP is in it for the long game, and this first one's kind of like they don't really care if it does well because they'll iterate.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's probably true. But I was surprised to see this week they are rolling out some very flashy TV ads with Russell Brand.
Oh,
that gives me the impression that they are spending a lot of money.
Really? Russell Brand?
Yeah.
Yeah. Saw it last night. Yeah.
He's going to sell you the HP TouchPad?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's probably going to be a love it or hate it device, much like, Russell Brand.
I'm going to go ahead and say Well, I've been working on some other stuff this week, but the touchpad has not seen much use since the first few days that I took it home.
I like it a lot. It's my favorite non-iPad tablet.
It's great, but the lack of Kindle and the lack of good Twitter client and some of that stuff makes it impossible for me to use on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
It's not something – it's not – you know, if you're comfortable using the web, then yes, it's good for that.
We have certain baseline expectations of a tablet or a phone now. And when they don't meet them, that's a real problem.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's Twitter, RDO, Kindle. Those are the three things I need.
RDO, really?
I'm not putting.
He pays for it.
I haven't put music on there's no music on my phone.
So you're going to get, if you get the next iPhone, which you probably have.
I'm probably going to get the small one.
16 gigs. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. What's your data cap?
Data cap?
Data cap.
Unlimited?
Yeah. See, that is a big...
We live in the future.
I know you do.
It's really, actually, we live in the past.
Yeah, it's really 2 gigs, 5 gigs, whatever AT&T's fake unlimited data is. But yeah, so but with RDO and Spotify for that matter, you can choose to cache the stuff on the local machine.
Yeah.
So I just manage it all through RDO, and RDO dumps all the music that I want to have available offline on all the machines.
And you can choose great. You know, caching only on Wi-Fi, not 3G, if you want. Yep.
Yeah, it's great. So speaking of app markets,
yes. Do you know where you're going with this?
Google unveiled the updated Android app market. I think we saw we saw this on tablets a few months ago with Hummingbird 3.0, 3.1. But they released it for phones this week, and you've spent some time with it.
Yeah, it's very, very nice. I mean, it reminds me a lot of almost the Windows Phone 7 experience, which is actually something a lot of folks have been saying, and that, you know, you don't have that stupid carousel at the top anymore. You actually have you're scrolling up and down, so you are, you know, scrolling, I guess, through a list of, you know, all the apps and things like that. But the organization is just leaps and bounds better than the way it was before.
Does it feel more curated, or are you still seeing like spamware and spyware apps on the homepage?
On the homepage, it definitely feels more curated. I mean, the fact that there is a giant banner taking up, you know, a good third of the screen, I think is a very big sign that, you know, Google wants to really highlight certain and special apps. But
what are the apps that they're putting in those banners? Do you know off the top of your head?
I can check right now. I mean, there was some sort of like productivity thing or something like that.
Like OmniPage or something like that?
Yeah. So, I mean, like when it loads up, it actually takes a little longer to load now, which I thought was kind of interesting. I actually don't have 3G now. But anyways, they've also added access to the video rentals and video downloads.
That's US only though, right?
That's US only. I haven't tried it yet, but I mean everything's like, you know, reasonably priced at, you know.
It seems to be the same pricing as Apple.
Same pricing as everyone
Apple,
else.
Everybody else.
Yeah.
There was also some hubbub this week about spyware and malware on the Android App Store, because what happens is people kind of release these apps, their malware apps. There's a couple of people that are doing it over and over again. An app gets banned, and then they just release something new. Mm-hmm. And they're basically gaming the system to reach the top real quick, and then they either start charging or it's free or whatever, and they'll harvest information from you. It's really sleazy. And I don't think there's been a Google comment about that stuff yet.
Not yet. I mean, I actually haven't personally seen this. But then again, I don't actually go browsing or trawling through the App Store all that often. I actually have it up right here. So at the top, you have an application called Bug Village.
Ooh.
Ooh. So that's there.
The village, it is full of bugs.
So and they kind of have this rolling, you know, sort of section where, you know, you have books that are now displayed on the side.
Kind of categories on the left side, apps on the right.
Books, videos, movies, star ratings underneath, which is, you know, definitely very useful.
Gary has a look of casual disdain.
No, not at all. I'm glad. I mean, you know, we've talked about this before, that the Android app market was a mess, right? They needed to clean it up.
Wow, Matt just handed Gary his phone.
That's a big risk.
Yeah.
I said that I would stop tweet-jacking you.
Yeah.
I didn't say anything about anyone else. I got to find a new target.
Yeah. Go after the Canadians.
I've got a whole new way I can go at this now.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
This looks much cleaner. In fact,
it mirrors
with the panes, it almost looks a little bit like Windows Phone 7, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's what we said. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's
very similar.
It mirrors the layout of the online app, the web app store as well, which is good.
Very much so. I mean, you know what? Just to be clear, this is a evolutionary thing, not a, you know, big leap in app store.
It's not the they're getting closer to what's already good, not making a leap forward that surpasses Apple, Amazon, WebOS, Windows
this
Phone 7.
This is much better than the App Store or App Market.
It looks better.
Yeah.
It
looks much better.
Yeah.
Now, if they can just fix that issue where when I search for Google apps, I actually get them at the top, that would be nice.
Yeah, that is one thing that has always amused me is that the search – you'd expect a company like Google that is founded on making search better than everyone else would actually be good at searching in the app marketplace, but not so much.
Mm-hmm. I forgot to mention as well, when you actually go into specific panes like books, you swipe back and forth to access to – yeah, you swipe back
and
forth.
Very happily.
Very happily, but I mean even this right here, you get this sort of featured section where
say,
you have –
say what this right here is. Yeah. People can't see.
So you're in a featured section for books.
I'm in a featured section for books and and it's very, very pain-like. You get these panes that you can kind of scroll through.
Tiles.
Tiles. So if I want to get Reckless Endangerment by Gretchen Morgenson.
I don't know what that is.
I don't know either, but
– sounds okay. Good though.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like a Scott Turow thriller. Reckless Endangerment.
Yeah. The Devil Colony by
Jimbo.
James Rowlands.
Jimbo. Yeah, so you go to those websites that will generate these, you know, the Omega Protocol. Right. It's just any number of words you can put together and create one of these like Robert Ludlum type books.
Jane Johnson is the DA for Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
The Sigma Ultimatum.
Yes, exactly.
Just never ends.
And of course, the top selling books on Android Market, take a guess.
Twilight.
Game of Thrones.
Oh, cool. Yeah, it just came out, right?
The nerds.
All of them.
Nerds.
And something called Heaven
what
is For
What do they cost
real.
There? They're $35 bucks on Amazon.
$8.99.
Each?
Each, or you can get all four for $30 bucks.
Pretty good.
So you save $5 from Amazon.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting.
Nice.
A couple of details coming out about YGig, which is the eventual replacement for Wi-Fi 802.11n.
Wi-Fi, it's not by the Wi-Fi.
Oh, so this is there's not going to be like.
Oh, this is not by the Wi-Fi Alliance.
Well, the people doing it have been a deal with the Wi-Fi Alliance.
Oh.
It's on
I
think 60 gigahertz spectrum, as opposed to 2.4. So
yeah.
Really. Really high.
But that's going to be bad penetration.
That's so bad. So the thing is, if anyone
it's
walks
filthy.
In front of it, you lose connection.
Right.
I was wondering if like Wi-Fi Q or whatever the next jump up the alphabet
is. It's actually 802.11ab or AD.
Oh, yeah. That's confusing. Oh,
don't like that.
Yeah, so the high frequency is a big concern for me. I think that, I mean, I believe through the days of 802.11a when everybody's like, oh, 5.4 gigahertz is going to change the world. So much more bandwidth. And then literally anytime a big sack of water walks between the router and what you're trying to send to, the connection just bombed out.
Mm-hmm.
That's a concern. The way these wireless spectrum, the way these wireless standards evolve, it usually takes about 8 years to go from the initial announcement of the name to actually seeing prototype hardware, much less shipping hardware. So I don't get excited about this now.
But considering
how old is Wi-Fi N now? How long?
We started talking about Wi-Fi N in like 2004 at MaxPC, I think.
So here we are 7 years later.
Right. It took a good 6 years. It was one of those things that they said, yeah, it'll be out next September in draft form. And then it was 4 years before saw draft N.
When Wi-Fi N was built, the hardware was in the Mac laptop, so you have to pay to unlock it.
Yeah, $2.
So
yeah, but that was a regulatory thing.
Yes.
To be fair.
Hold on. Don't fucking apologize for that bullshit. That is what they told you. Mm-hmm. Everybody swallowed it because Mac fans do that. And then they could tell you, well, we have an accounting fee that requires us. Blah, blah, blah. It's a licensing regulation.
No, but weren't there actually articles that explained?
It's bullshit. You shouldn't have to pay to
unlock
stuff.
Will's not interesting in facts if they contradict his anti-Apple narrative.
Exactly. I have no anti-Apple narrative. I'm anti-bullshit.
Okay.
And that is some bullshit right there.
What if you had to choose between paying $2 and returning your laptop?
I would tie a brick to my laptop and throw it through the plate glass window in front of the Apple store.
Will would pay the $2.
With a note that says
yes, he would.
And I would pay $2 to see that, so everyone comes out ahead.
Right. I guess I don't have to tie a brick to it, but the brick would be for effect at that point, just so they know it wasn't
an
accident.
If it was an air, you might have to. Otherwise,
that's true.
I just
bounce off and hit me in the face. Cut me across the neck. There was a kerfluffle last week about DisplayPort to HDMI adapters. DisplayPort is saying they're not legit or something.
Yeah, apparently the DisplayPort DisplayPort mail to HDMI mail are not considered spec. And anyone who's selling those cables, including Apple stores, are actually doing so, quote-unquote, illegally. So
you have to just DisplayPort mail to
DisplayPort mail to
HDMI
display
female?
Yeah, to HDMI female, I think is allowed.
That's so stupid.
I know. And then, well, the rationale for that is then so you can use properly spec'd and verified HDMI cables.
Oh, yeah. Which, I'm going to go through my house and make sure all my cables are properly spec'd and verified.
And Monster built, right?
Oh, never. Never. Monoprice.
Make sure you have the ferrite. The magnets.
One thing that is interesting about this is I don't think a lot of people realize, but pretty much every cable that's not an audio cable or like an RCA cable, and probably even RCA cable since they're called RCA cables, has a spec, has a licensing thing. Mm-hmm. Whoever makes them theoretically has to pay somebody a couple bucks or a couple cents or whatever. Or they're open and they're free. I think USB is one of those. Mm-hmm. But everything, FireWire, USB, all the data connections, all the internal cables, SATA, even parallel IDE and PATA and that stuff, all of those are there's a licensing – there's a board – there's an organization that controls those cables and what is legit and what is not legit. That is why you never ever see USB, the kind of USB that you plug into the motherboard to that same cable on the same end. Nobody makes those because they don't work that way.
Yeah. And to be fair, I mean, these specs are put forth so that, you know, your devices and your cables and everything do work properly. That's not to say that finding a cable or something that is, you know, not licensed or, you know, not.
I got what kind of cable you need? I got them all right here. Open your coat.
Yeah. Some of them have just like wires poking out of them and don't look particularly safe.
I think that the reasonable solution to this problem by the DisplayPort folks would have been to make a spec for a DisplayPort male to a HDMI female.
They're talking
male
about
port.
It.
That'll take another 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, it'll take a while. But they're looking to, I don't know, maybe amendments don't take as long. I don't
know.
Well,
then HDMI will be replaced.
Yeah. HDMI 3.6.
Yeah, that's right.
August 23rd, Nyko Kinect.
That's my birthday.
So when you have happy birthday. Or you can, your living room is big enough to use a Kinect, though, I think.
Yeah, I'm Kinect free.
You have to push your furniture out of the way, though.
No Kinect.
He refuses.
That's a good policy. My living room is too shallow to use a Kinect. Oh. I mean, I have to put the Kinect way against the wall and move everything out of the way. I got rid of the coffee table already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's funny. You look at these Microsoft promotional videos and ads, and everyone lives in these ridiculous, like, Jetsons-style living rooms where there's just huge amounts of warehouse-style space.
In fairness, we live in a very compact area of the country where there's a high population density and small houses.
But the problem is, even taking that into account, the fact is there's usually something between you and the TV. Like downstairs in my house, when in my living room, if I want to play Dance Central or anything involving Kinect, with full body movement,
coffee table has to go.
I just won't do it. I'm like, I gotta move the coffee table. I'll just play something else.
Yeah,
it's interesting you bring that up because not to go too far off topic, but Microsoft actually has a house outside of Seattle, and they've segmented
a house.
Oh my god, we're gonna get so much Canadian hate.
Poor My Fair Lady all over again.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in planes.
Yep.
Okay.
Microsoft has a house outside of Seattle.
Outside.
So they have a house outside of Seattle that they have actually set up to emulate different room types in different cultures.
He was killed by a mouse.
They have an American room that's set up to look like an American household. They have a
Fuck does an American household look like?
That's what I asked them because they also had
one of those fake towns they used to create in Russia during the Cold War.
Exactly.
Or like the nuclear bomb towns.
Yeah. They had the South Asian room, and then they had like the you know, your average European
just
room.
All the racism that could take place in there.
Pretty much. Wow. And they had Kinects in each one, and they were supposed to emulate the, you know, usual living experience.
I'm so offended right now.
The Canadian room, they have like a moose head up on the wall.
You know what you'll especially love is that if you went into like the South Asian room, they had like the sliding doors or like the things that people
the paper doors.
Okay. And they had all
no chairs to the floor.
No chair. I have pictures somewhere. I need to go find them. But
So we eventually gave up on the Kinect downstairs and realized we weren't using it that very much.
Yeah.
And we put it upstairs we have an Xbox upstairs, and we'll put it in the bedroom where there is actually space between, you know, you and the TV.
Yeah.
And so if you want to do like workout games or whatever, it's better suited for that.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. I not only is my room too narrow, but I don't have enough front lighting to use the Kinect. So I'm whammied twice, basically.
You know the other problem.
What?
There's almost nothing on Kinect.
Child of Eden is awesome, dude.
Child of Eden is brilliant, and you should go buy it and get it for $30 from GameStop now, and you should absolutely go buy it. It is the Kinect killer app.
That is pretty shilly from GameStop, even.
That's still not a good enough of a reason to go buy a Kinect.
What about when Milo comes out?
Milo's canceled, dude.
Yeah, Milo was never more than a tech demo.
I'm keeping the faith.
Milo was a filter on a camera for a kid in the back of behind Peter Molyneux's house.
You're telling me that you wouldn't buy a game where you just interact with a little child?
Oh, it's like AI.
That's
where,
super creepy.
Where Haley Joel Osment, it was really the creator's son.
Yeah.
It's why he created the robot in the first place. Very, very Milo, creepy. Yeah.
It's also like the character of Glenn in Mad Men.
Our last, very, very last news item for this week.
No, there's more news. Don't worry about it. What's up? You say so.
HTC is going to unlock Sensation and Nevo 3D bootloaders in September.
I don't even know what that means.
Means you can put, it'll be really easy to put Cyanogen or some other third-party ROM,
Android
ROM on your phone. If you have an HTC Sensation and Nevo 3D, which is, I mean, that's good. More open Android phones is a good thing.
You're gonna
what's your supplemental news, Jen?
iPhone 4, August 15th. iPhone 5, August 15th.
Well, so because
this is another bullshit rumor.
No, is this based on that rumor about how they're hiring more staff?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. They're hiring additional retail
in
staff.
In UK, multiple listings for additional retail staff in AT&T or not AT&T,
you know what? You know what would be funny?
Phone stores. August 16th.
Remember in the old iPod days when like the new iPod might just be the same as the old iPod, but in colors. Like they do say, hey, iPod Nano.
They did that already.
It was white last year. This year it's going to be red, blue, orange, and green. What if this year's iPhone is just an iPhone 4?
But it was never just a color
with multiple colors. I think that there was one year that the size increased with the Nano.
Yeah,
but it went from being white plastic, Apple white plastic.
That was the brush
to
metal.
To brush like metal colors.
Anodized.
Yeah, but same device inside, different capacities.
Don't you just love the way that Apple does this? Like it's like an ARG.
It's sick.
No, it's great.
It's the Skinner machine. They're doing the same thing. I just want to fucking press the button so I can give me the pellet, you bastards.
When even Will has blue balls for an Apple product, you know that they are gaming him badly.
I wanted to use this actually to talk about, because if we're talking about a mid-August potentially release, for an iPhone.
Oh, dear Lord.
What will possibly come out this fall? I am going to say right now, I think there's the iPad Pros. I believe it.
You think you quad resolution?
You got to remember the iPhone 5, or whatever they call it, is going to be shackled to iOS 5 the same way that the MacBooks are now waiting on Lion. So... You've got to bear that in mind, too.
Yeah. I'm moving on to iPad. I think there's going to be another iPad this year. I really believe. I think it makes sense.
This isn't news. I think we should have a rumor section of the show now.
I think rumor control.
Right. This makes sense and sucks because before we assumed that next year we were going to get the quad pixel iPad in the iPad 3.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the case anymore.
I think Norm is right.
I think the iPad... The quad pixel, those split.
If there is a quad pixel iPad,
if they make
a product out of it,
there is one because the panels exist. Samsung has a panel. The factories exist. They're going to be extremely expensive. Apple's not going to put them in a $500 device.
How expensive are we talking? What do you think?
I think it's going to start at $1,000.
I think $1,500.
So you're saying that the next iPad won't have the Retina display?
No, I think the next one will. The iPad Pro. I think they're going to segment it out so they can. Put the more expensive hardware in an iPad and bump up the price, call it the Pro model, so they can keep their margins high.
You know how on
and keep
on
the
video
iPad
games?
Refresh
because you can't because well, you standard. Because you wouldn't be able to just go to a Retina display and still have a good entry level price point.
Exactly,
for it, right?
Unless Apple has the, I mean, we all know Apple has the best supply chain mojo in the world. That's why they. Yep. That's why they're the biggest company in the world. I don't think even Apple can make a quad resolution 2560x1600. 9.7 inch display. Whatever it is. It's a stupid high resolution display at 9.7 inches. I don't think they can do that and keep it under $500. Yeah.
As I have said before, with this Pro designation, what is the point besides offering?
So here's the thing. It's the Goldilocks. It's the Goldilocks marketing, right?
Yeah.
You have a high-end audience for almost any product that's willing to pay a significant amount more for something
that's
better. Whether
they
actually need it or not. So they released the Mama Bear product, or the Baby Bear product that's just right for the mass market. That's crazy. It's normal price. It's accessible. People are used to it. They capture another 10% of the market that's willing to pay a significant higher price and generate a higher margin.
And last year's model is the Baby Bear.
Right. Last year's model is the Baby Bear. The March, January, whatever, $500 product is the Baby Bear. I don't know what the Mama Bear is. I guess that's something that's shitty.
I think the January one is the Mama Bear.
The Papa Bear is the
high
Big
end.
Daddy. Yeah.
The Mama Bear, which is the just right one?
The Baby is just right.
Okay, Baby's just right. So right. Baby is in January.
I guess the Android tablets are the Baby are the Mama Bear in this analogy.
Or
we're making a lot of fans this week.
I've had one.
Okay.
Last year's model.
They're not going to keep selling old iPads.
I guess that's true.
Point is, I keep thinking of the rumor that Apple is going to be using this iPad Pro for Pro software and Pro purposes, which I just still doesn't think – I don't think that
No, matters. It's going to be for iPad users who are Pro iPadders.
Right. Remember, the Pro line doesn't mean you're professional anymore.
Yeah, the MacBook That's Pro true. Doesn't mean that you have to be a Pro user. There are many.
Just like I'm Final a Pro. Pro.
It's just a way of saying yeah. more powerful.
iMovie Pro. It's the same thing.
You mean Final Cut 7?
10.
10?
Yeah. You really blew that joke,
yeah,
didn't you,
Braga? I did.
So any more news? Any more in the rumor control section, Chan? No,
this is a disappointment.
I think we should start a sweepstakes for when this stuff is going to come out.
I might be my words, because if the high resolution one comes out in September,
yeah,
and if that means that the iPad 3, whatever comes out, the baby bear in January does not have the high resolution because there's no way they can sell it for $500. Does that mean I have to pick up the high resolution?
I think you're overthinking it again. I think you just wait to see where the chips fall and then make your decision.
I hate waiting. Don't you know that? I've been waiting this entire 2 weeks.
I just had the best idea for a new segment we're not going to talk about here right now because it spoils like multiple levels of things. But oh my God.
I see the words. You see three, four, five, six words.
Yes. You can't look, Bragger. You're not going to be able to
I see the words.
This is a terrible segment. Move on. Moving on.
You know, you could replace those last two words with two other words and it would work just as well.
No doubt. I'm going to play the music and then let's talk about what we've been testing. This is a big week for testing, partly because there's three of us here for a while, but also
four of us here.
Gary's here too, but yeah. Gary's not usually Gary tests many things. But not in a
including your patients.
Yes, that is something you do
on a regular basis.
On a regular basis. Okay, I'm going to just start right in. I've been testing OS X Line.
You did a quick look, right?
Did a video quick look. Quick look. We'll see how long before they ask us to take that down, if they do at all.
So what's the bottom? Is it a thumbs up or what is it?
It's a mixed bag. I think it's an instant buy for people who use laptops primarily, just because the mission control stuff, if you are a power user who uses a small screen machine, mission control is the bomb.
Yeah, and so many of the features revolve around these multi-touch gestures.
Right, that's the other side of it. If in order to take advantage of this, you have to use a Magic Trackpad, this is not a good release for you.
Yeah.
Because the Magic Trackpad, still not a good product.
Yeah.
The other side of it is there are good keyboard shortcuts. I discovered a bunch of keyboard shortcuts yesterday as I was using some more stuff. So like if you're an iMac user or something like that, if you have a 24-inch iMac, you're short on display space.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a bad thing for you. If you have a 27-inch iMac, it's much less valuable upgrade. The other stuff, so mission control, awesome. Combined spaces and expose. We did the big quick look. Go watch that if you're interested. I'm not going to talk about it here. Launchpad is lame. That's basically the app menu.
The iOS style.
Menu. It solves a problem. I mean, the app, launching apps and finding them has been a problem for OS X since the dawn of OS X, I think. Because the applications folder is not a good way to do that.
It's not. But so the problem they're trying to solve here is, what do you do when you want to launch an app that isn't in your dock?
Yes.
You
Spotlight.
Spotlight.
Yeah, that comes right up. Spotlight fixed this, three releases ago now?
Yeah.
It is a much better way to do it. It's instant. You have a keyboard on your computer. Putting the apps in an unordered list is not the way to fix that problem.
Yeah, folders.
Yeah, it's doesn't make sense. I mean the iOS app menu is broken on iOS. It is the worst part of iOS. It's something they have to fix at some point in the not too distant future.
Yeah.
Bringing that to that Mac does not make it better.
I'm very excited for Line, but actually not for – and it will be an instant upgrade for me, but not for the reasons that we've talked about. I like some of the other features. I like the mail, I think, looks much better now. And we've said this before, but I really, really like the instant saving and revisions.
The instant saving and revisions are great if your apps support them. So it turns out after using this – that you have to have support for that stuff built in order to take advantage.
Well, I use Pages and Apple apps.
Pages didn't do it yesterday when I was testing it out.
Well, it's not live yet.
I know. I'm just telling you. So there may be a little bit of a lag, definitely on third-party apps. For the most part, though, it's a pretty good update. If you are a pro user, it's a little bit other stuff that's changed. It's all 64-bit now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if you have 32-bit apps that you rely on, and I think you use a 32-bit app, right? One of your screenwriting software.
Yeah, so this is right. In my little screenwriting circle, we've been discussing this because – and I think this is true also of a lot of you know, people that work in specific professional fields at very specific software, like niche software that isn't widely supported. Like me and a lot of people that I know in screenwriting use a piece of software called Final Draft, which is basically a word processor that's designed to just create screenplays. You know, it's very specific formatting.
Hold on. I have a question. Before we go on, like what it's just like the character name in the margin and then like scene setting stuff and all
that. Yeah, I mean, it comes with a template which is exactly set up for how a screenplay should be formatted.
Okay.
And it also does lots of other little tricks and shortcuts. I mean, when your character names are
and stuff like that.
Yeah, it remembers where your character names. Like if I write two characters are talking and I write the name of one character, the next piece of dialogue is going to auto-complete the next guy because it knows it's a conversation that's happening.
Oh, okay, that's cool.
The basic point is that when you create a word processor that is only supposed to do one very specific kind of document, it can really drill down and be helpful in very specific ways.
Yeah.
So it's a good piece of software for that reason. But because it's a small piece of software by a small company, oftentimes when these big updates happen, those pieces of software have to make sure that they can function. So they put out an alert saying, oh, you got to include this patch before Lion, otherwise your piece of software you may not work. Like I use Final Draft every day. I can't upgrade to Lion and have that piece of software suddenly not work. That's my livelihood. Fortunately, they put out a patch which should fix it, so hopefully it won't be a problem. But talk about 64-bit. Snow Leopard was kind of quasi 64-bit, right?
Yeah.
But this is fully – now they've fully gone over to 64-bit. Is that correct?
It's unclear. I mean, there's
– So the way it works, I mean, on – kind of the interesting thing about running a Hackintosh is that I can force the entire OS to run in 64-bit. So for me, the kernel runs in 64-bit on Snow Leopard. The extensions are all 64-bit, and a lot of the applications run 64-bit. I'm not entirely sure whether the applications themselves have to be 64. I'm pretty sure the way universal binaries work, they can be 64.
I think. But there are some big apps that aren't 64-bit capable, like Final Cut Pro 7. It's a 32-bit app.
Okay, but it should still work in
– I think it'll still work in the fallback compatibility mode, right?
Okay. So what we're getting at then is that it's still a hybrid. It's just that I think when they say that Lion is 64-bit, they mean that the kernel and the extensions and all that core system
stuff. So they mean that the hardware you're running it on has to be 64-bit,
yes,
which isn't a problem since all the Intel hardware – Apple's ever shipped is 64-bit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But for this reason, I think a lot of people that use pro apps and unlike us don't care about all the new bells and whistles that Lion provides.
Well, I mean, I use a browser and a music player and like three other things. I'm not a real – I mean, I use Photoshop. Photoshop's going to continue to work.
Right, but we like all the cool features that Lion's going to add. A lot of people that just want their Final Cut Pro to work because it's just their work machine don't give a shit about that. They're not going to upgrade.
Right. Absolutely.
I mean, that's the same with that. I mean, that's true every time, you know, Windows comes out. Most people don't upgrade right away because they just want things to continue to work.
The one thing I will say is that the most iOS-y of the new features, I think, is the – aside from the app menu, which we've established is dopey, is the full screen apps, which I didn't think were going to be good at all. Mm-hmm. I didn't think it was something I was going to be using at all. It is an awesome feature.
Yeah.
After using it, it's something it's hard to not have on Windows. And I think I'm probably going to switch to using a Mac as my work machine here full time.
And Spaces, too.
Well, Spaces, the way they integrate Spaces with the full screen apps so that you can literally just sideswipe from one to the next seamlessly
is brilliant. Full screen apps become a space.
Yeah.
So, for instance, I am absolutely in love with using iTunes as a full screen app because then I don't have to have it mixing in with all my other apps.
Now, do I have that functionality on my desktop? If I don't have a touchpad or something, is there a keyboard shortcut?
Yeah, I think it's command arrow right, command arrow left. Okay. Or you can bind it to mouse keys as well.
Okay, cool.
I did it with a keyboard shortcut by accident.
It's the number keys, I'm pretty sure. But because the old way Spaces worked, it was the arrows. Maybe that still works.
I think you can do command arrow to go left and right.
Oh, and then you can use the numbers to choose a specific space.
Yep. Yeah. It's quite a good feature. The autosave stuff is nice. Honestly, using a real word processor, I haven't had a problem with that. Or like Google Docs, I haven't had a problem with saves in a long time. But I mean, for the most part, it's a kind of, you know, everything else is more or less the same.
You know what baffles me is why can't you bind Spaces to a mouse button? Like, for instance, I can't use my mouse's scroll wheel, which has like a left and right click to go back and forth between spaces. That would be killer. If that was possible, but it's not.
Like the left and right scroll?
Yeah.
The tilt scroll?
Yeah, the tilt scroll. If I could use that, then that's totally
cool. I have a question about
I'm sure you get macros to do that.
And the way that it's being distributed through the Mac App Store.
Yeah.
So when you buy things on the Mac App Store, those apps are then tied to your Apple ID, right?
Yes.
If I install Lion,
yes,
from the Mac App Store on my MacBook Air,
yes,
and then say 3 months from now sell my MacBook Air to, yes, someone else. And obviously, I would take off all my accounts, and someone's going to sign in with their own Apple ID.
I have no idea.
Is Lion still going to work?
I would assume so.
Because Lion's not like an app. I mean, that's the whole OS.
I think, well, the way the install works now is you basically, with the developer build, you download an executable, you run that, and it just basically reboots the computer and installs Lion on top of Snow Leopard.
Right.
You can break it out and do a standalone install. There's a process for that. It's not particularly well documented by Apple, but users have figured it out. And I would assume that you'll have a similar situation with the final version. I don't think that they're going to tie I think you're going to deliver the OS to your Mac through the App Store.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be like Windows where you have to activate and tie it to your Apple ID in order to log in.
Right.
So my hunch would be that that is tied to that machine forever. You can have up to 5 machines connected to your Apple ID at once.
Yeah, but they're not selling like family packs or anything.
I think
that
there's volume licensing for corporate. Yeah. But the big change is that if you have a MacBook Pro and an iMac and you buy Snow Leopard once for $30, you can install it on both.
You can
of those.
Put it on anything.
It seems
that you're,
according
and
to the
that's,
licenses.
And that's cool because I've got 2 machines I'm going to want to put it on. Yeah. It's only going to cost me $15 per install.
Right.
So that's pretty cool.
Which is much better than the family pack pricing ever was.
It's not going to cost Norm anything because he's going to get it on his new fancy new MacBook Air.
Right.
Whenever that comes out.
The interesting thing about all this is that Apple is really leveraging their ability to sell the OS for cheap because they're already making their money on hardware. Versus, say, Microsoft, where they want to make $100 or $200
bucks. Yeah, and obviously, I know. Yeah, they're obviously based around different business models. But every time Apple puts out one of these updates for $30, I think it makes the $200 copy of Windows look ridiculous.
Well, I mean, in fairness, the $200 copy of Windows has cost $100 for the last 10 years.
Yeah, I picked it up for $60. So
right.
It's.
I mean, if you buy an OEM edition of Windows, it costs $100. Pretty
OEM, yeah, but like if you go into the store and buy
a retail,
like, what
upgrade
is Windows
is
like Windows 7, like Home Premium, whatever the fuck they call it,
$100 at retail for an upgrade version.
For the upgrade version,
yeah,
but okay. The upgrade version can be used as a full version.
Of course, you can standalone install your Anyway, other stuff that's big, the app resume thing that requires API stuff to work, so we haven't been able to test that very much. Mm-hmm. Like it works with TextEdit and some of the other built-in apps.
Yeah.
They've changed the design. I did find out you can change the buttons to get colors back again.
But default is no colors?
Default is no colors. Mm-hmm. So in the general control panel under settings, you can change between graphite and aqua has colors, graphite has no colors.
Nice.
And then the other thing is that scroll bars disappear when you're using 2-finger scroll to move between. They've redesigned contacts and address book and that kind of stuff. I find that the redesigns are a little bit precious because they mimic paper in ways that I think don't make any sense at all when you're dealing with a computer. But if that's the way Apple wants to go to make the boomers feel happy, that's fine. I don't care.
Now, the cloud features are not coming with this, right? That's a separate thing later down the road. Is that correct?
It's unclear when the cloud stuff's going to roll out.
Yeah.
Yeah, they haven't made any kind of commitments to that. There is an ability to integrate with cloud right now. Like you sign in, you can associate your Apple ID with your user account. You can do all sorts of other things it's much better integrated with webmail and Gmail and stuff like that. So when you open Safari and go to, log into Google, it'll say, hey, do you want to associate your Google account with iCal address book and mail? So right. It'll just automatically set up those accounts for you.
That's cool.
Yeah, which is pretty cool. Screen sharing is integrated with user accounts. So yesterday, Matt let me screen share with his computer without having to make an account for me. He just had to say that my email address was authorized to access that computer, basically.
Yeah, Mac you can address. Provision people with Apple IDs.
It was an email address.
That's what I mean, Apple IDs.
Well, but the thing is, he used an email address that's only associated with my Apple ID is a 15-year-old email address that I never use anymore. You use my current email address, and that still worked because that's associated with my Apple ID through FaceTime and iMessage. So anyway,
the other feature, by the way, that I really like, and I think people are going to get a lot of use out of, mm-hmm. and I'm actually kind of amazed that it's taken Apple this long to come up with a solution to a problem so basic, a simple solution.
Yeah,
is AirDrop.
Yeah,
yeah,
and AirDrop's terrific,
and that's neat. That uses Wi-Fi to share files between computers that are close to each other. So when you turn that on, two people turn on AirDrop. You both have to be in the app in order for it to work. You can't send it blind in the background.
But if I'm doing something and you try to send me something, won't I get an alert?
No, we have to be close enough that I can say, "Hey Gary, turn on AirDrop. I'm going to send you a file."
Oh, I see.
So, this is a good thing, because I don't want to be in an airport and have some malware running and get 75 alerts every time I open my laptop in an airport. It works really well.
Yeah, no, it works very, very well. The one thing I kind of want to know is, how does it sense when you're nearby? Like, would it just be tracking, like, you know, decibel value of the Wi-Fi signal, or? Because keep in mind, like, we're sitting across the office and we can't AirDrop. I have to come, like,
right, I would bet it's a bonjour. Oh, that's an interesting point. I don't know.
Yeah.
You should do a when it's fully out. You should do a range test.
That's actually probably why it doesn't run in the background. Because it only starts looking when you turn on Wi-Fi. We can do some testing to see. It basically time slices Wi-Fi. So when you switch this on, even though it's using the Wi-Fi network. Either it's using the kind of MIMO nature of 802.11n, or it's time slicing the access point and the AirDrop connection.
I mean, it probably doesn't have to have a tremendous range, because, you know, like you said, the way that it works and the way that most people will probably use it is when you are sitting.
Yeah,
right,
you're sitting at a table and you're like, "Hey, I'm going to send you a file," and rather than have a file share, Dropbox,
or anything.
Well,
even if it's like in a house, and, you know, instead of using the local network, you want to send a file over.
Now, the thing that I'm excited about on this is device-to-device communication that's not mediated by the cloud. So it works without internet access.
So we could both be at an airport.
Yeah.
And we don't need to have –
It's always an airport, this example, isn't
it? Well, I mean, I'm just trying to think of a scenario. But we don't need to both be on the same Wi-Fi network. No. It's just going to create a direct peer-to-peer connection. That's great.
Right. It's good. You can still stay on the internet at the same time, so you don't have to drop if you are connected. The thing that I'm waiting for is when you can do this between the Mac and iOS devices.
Mm-hmm. Because is there any reason why it's using this and not Bluetooth?
Because Bluetooth sucks.
Speed. Yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah. I mean, 802.11n is a lot faster than Bluetooth also.
Right.
So wait, have we confirmed that it's using N? Do we know that? Because, I mean, if I'm connected to a G network? Can it actually switch that fast?
The way N works, you can be connected to multiple networks simultaneously. You can connect to G and N simultaneously. It'll reduce your theoretical throughput on N, but probably not enough to notice on an internet connection type situation.
So is this the sort of thing that works on chipsets that don't support N? Do we know?
No idea. I don't. I think everything that Apple has shipped probably supports N.
And is there any file size limitation? Could I send you like a massive movie file or something over this thing?
Matt sent me a 300 meg file. I sent Matt a 300 meg file. It worked fine.
You started sending me the DMG, which was like 3.5 gigs.
Whatever. Yeah, it was big.
It was
all right. Good.
The one thing
does
I want to say,
resume? Like stop and resume if you lose the connection.
Unclear. We didn't try that.
Oh, okay.
The one thing I would love to see with this is the ability to do iOS to Mac and vice versa.
Yeah,
because the situation I always have is that I'm in an airport. I have a phone with a good connection. I need to get a file from the phone to the computer or vice versa.
Right now it's email or Dropbox.
And right now it's email or Dropbox. And that only works if everybody's connected to the internet.
Yep.
AirDrop is awesome as another way to kind of leverage your phone or iPad 3G connection.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Okay, more stuff we're testing. Norm, you're working with the e-transformer now.
The ASUS e-pad transformer.
Yeah, we did a quick look at this last week.
Yep, I still like it. There are a couple things. I want to use it as a laptop. I'm using it more as a laptop than as a tablet, because as a tablet, it's just Honeycomb tablet.
Mm-hmm.
But there are things about Honeycomb that make it, in my head, less friendly. The keyboard's not so great. There's a bit of lag.
Lag.
When trying to type. Also, there's a firmware problem with the tablet where battery drains when it's in sleep mode.
Oh,
so it did not last as long as I wanted to. I had to recharge it. Also, it's like when I move the mouse over to the right side in a browser, I want to see like the scroll bar. I want to use the mouse for scroll bar as opposed to two-finger scrolling sometimes. And you can't access the scroll bar unless you start two-finger scrolling.
Oh.
Little things. The biggest thing is there's no alt tab. I know in Honeycomb you can. There's the icon that lets you see all your recently opened apps. There's no keyboard shortcut.
So
there's no alt tab. What I would love is some type of like on iOS, iOS 5, we have 3-finger swipe to go between open apps. I would want that in some type of shortcut.
It's kind of neat. I played with it for 2 minutes before the podcast. I kind of like it.
Yeah, the cursor works really well.
How does battery charge it? Like when you need to charge it, do you have to plug in both the keyboard and the tablet, or you just plug in one?
Well,
and
the
it
tablet
charges both?
Docks the keyboard through its 30-pin or whatever pin charging dock, and then from there you can only charge it from the actual keyboard.
So then when you plug in the keyboard, does it charge the tablet first and then
the
keyboard?
Tablet first, then the keyboard.
Okay, that's the way I would want that to work.
Right. So right now it shows I have like 73% battery, but if I take it out, it's also 73% because all the battery is gone from the...
Okay, so it's emptied so the keyboard.
Yeah. How is Android when you use it as a laptop computing platform?
I think it's great.
Yeah?
Yeah, the browser could be better. It would be faster. Yeah. Like I said, I was trying to type in Google Docs and trying to type even in the search field, and I was typing faster than the tablet could respond.
Does it feel a bit like using a Chromebook?
Better than using a Chromebook.
Oh, yeah? Oh.
Yeah, because I can actually go in the market and download apps. I just got Spotify. Right.
See, right. this is where things get confusing, I think, as far as, you know, Google's ecosystem goes.
This is a product that has to have the Google product. The brand manager is a little bit kind of scratching their heads.
I would actually recommend – I think if you're right, I'm sure you are, given the fact that you can split it in half and do all that, I would actually recommend this over a Chromebook.
Well, this is definitely more compelling than, say, the Atrix. Like that Atrix and the dot.
Oh, yeah.
Because this whole thing cost what the Atrix keyboard attachment did.
Yeah.
I'm interested in this.
The whole two pieces together cost what?
$570.
Which is about only a little bit more than a Chromebook, right?
Chromebook's $500 for the 3G.
$430 for the Wi-Fi one.
Oh, okay.
This is Wi-Fi only.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's see. We talked about the touchpad a little bit. We'll have a full review of that coming up soon. The next stuff is the SwiftKey. You've been using SwiftKey a little bit. This is so SwiftKey, a lot of people have asked us about this. We had a lot of requests for it. It is a keyboard replacement for Android. It is among the most popular. It's right up there with Swipe in my experience. It's always in the high sales part of the App Store. Mm-hmm. And those guys actually came by and kind of gave us a demo last week. Matt, you've used it a little bit. I've used it a little bit. I think we had a different experience.
Yeah. I have a very, very hate relationship with soft keyboards. I mean, I went from using a BlackBerry, which is still the best.
Very Canadian of you.
Very Canadian of me, but it was still the best keyboard that I've ever used. So
is that mandated? Like they give those out in eighth grade or something when you guys are in school? Everybody gets BlackBerries?
Yes.
Okay.
So with SwiftKey, SwiftKey has some interesting tricks that attempt to make you type better. It will analyze it can analyze social media accounts, so it can analyze your Twitter account, your Facebook account, and your Gmail account
to see how you use words.
To see how you use words and how you type. And it's funny because I notice this now. Like I use a lot of words jokingly or ironically or what have you. So now when I type, sometimes I see things like cromulent pop up and like
you do use cromulent a lot.
I do, and I think that's kind of funny because
it's a perfectly cromulent word.
It is a perfectly. Thank you. Well done. So stuff like that pops up, but I mean, as the keyboard itself.
So there's a few things that I noticed as a result of the
the
way that their pitch guy hit it to us was most of the type ahead keyboards use word prediction. They use language prediction, which sounds really markety, but it kind of makes sense.
Yep.
The one thing I will say drives me batty on iOS and a lot of Android keyboards too is the its thing. Yep. Its is very easy to understand in the context of a sentence because there's
– wait, are we talking about ice cream sandwiches?
No, not – Gary suddenly perked up.
I suddenly came back into the conversation. Yeah, I was glazing over for a second.
It's getting food time. What I'm saying is ITS versus IT apostrophe S. SwiftKey does a very good job with that type of problem.
Yeah.
In a way that iOS, which almost always corrects it to be IT apostrophe S and in a wrong way, does not do.
Not even that, but possessives in general, I find it does a pretty good job with. Yes. Like, if I want to say Will's ice cream, it will know that I'm talking about your ice
or
cream.
Or we're versus were.
Yes.
Yeah, that's always one that iOS mucks up. So that stuff is really good on.
It's nice.
Yeah. It does some fuzzy it models the way you use the keyboard and actually lets you choose whether you want to be a sloppy typer or a precise typer.
What have you been using?
I've been using sloppy because I'm hella sloppy. I don't even look at it. I just bang general vicinity.
I don't find it's helping though.
When I switched to precise and started paying a little bit more attention, it got much better.
Okay. See, that's what I haven't done yet, and I've been debating doing that. And I'm also still using it with haptic feedback. And usually I'm not one to really enjoy haptic feedback.
Oh, I like haptic feedback.
Do you like
it? Favorite part of Android. Says something about Android, I guess.
Or maybe if I'm using the haptic feedback with precise, it'll be a little better. But I find that sloppy is really screwing me up. Sloppy
might be too sloppy.
I think so. I think that might be it because I find that I'm almost maybe like halfway between the two of them. I think that's probably my issue.
Chloe's coming up to visit Gary.
Yeah.
No Norm love. Norm is sad. I think it's a pretty good product. I mean, I know you've had a bad experience with it. You used it on the Nexus, right?
Not a horrible experience. I mean, I think part of my problems are that the Nexus One is also plagued by an issue with a dopey digitizer.
Oh yeah, that's right. I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah, it's hey girl.
You should swipe one of our other unintentional there. One of our other Android phones and test it on that, or maybe take the Zoom for a couple of days and see what you think.
Also, you forgot to mention how do you go back against words that you don't want to use?
Oh, now this is a great killer feature. So you know how when you type on iOS or Android or any other keyboard, you miss the word and you miss the X to change it. So then you have to just backspace. You know,
yep.
It's hard to say backspace multiple times in a row. I just learned, Jim. This, you just swipe your finger from the right side of the keyboard to the left, and it erases the last word.
It is a perfectly cromulent feature.
That's a cool
feature. It is a fucking awesome feature. So there's a lot of really good stuff in here. We were testing a beta, so I think it's out yesterday now or today. Can we update
it? Yeah, today.
Yeah,
today.
It's out today. So if you want to try it, it's on the network. It's on the Android market. If you've already paid for SwiftKey in the past, it's a free update.
Yep.
They are keeping the tablet and the phone version separate. So you have to pay an extra $2 or something for the tablet version.
One is what? SwiftKey X and the other one is just
SwiftKey. They're both SwiftKey X, but one is HD and one is there's a tablet edition and there's a not tablet edition. Buy the tablet edition if you're using tablets. I think. It may even be the same. I'm messing this up.
Actually, you know what I wonder is if you were to buy SwiftKey X on a tablet and you also had an Android phone. Would you have to rebuy it?
I have no idea. That'd be interesting. That's the way it works on iOS a lot of the time.
Yeah, that's what I was
usually
wondering.
Android doesn't do that.
Android.
Who knows?
So that's been fun.
So other stuff, Razer Mamba version 2, Norm.
Yeah, still liking it.
Quick look on the site now. Yep, it's a dual sensor, optical and laser, right?
Yeah, I don't think you really need a dual sensor. I mean, it's replacing the old Mamba, so they don't even sell that anymore.
And the neat thing about the Mamba is it's wireless and wired.
Yeah, so that is the neat thing. If you have an existing Mamba, I don't think there's a big reason to upgrade unless you have really, really fast hands, you play a lot of shooters, and you lift your mouse off the mouse pad.
That was cool.
I think you can adjust that in the software on the old Mamba, too, though.
I don't think so.
Really?
Mm.
That's always been a feature that they've touted.
But if you don't need the 6400 DPI... I mean, you're fine with a
5800 DPI mouse.
Yeah, 5400 DPI. I'm fine with a wired Logitech G9X.
Okay.
Here.
Gary, you've been testing out some fitness. This is your shape. This is what you've talked about before, but I don't think we ever called it out by name. Your calorie tracker app, right?
No, this is something else. So I had been using an app.
Is this the Xbox thing? What's your shape fitness?
You're confused. That's an Xbox thing.
Okay.
The app you're talking about that I had previously been using, that's just an iPhone app on a website, which does, you know, you put in your food and it
does it have keeps, a name?
It's called MyFitnessPal.
Okay.
MyFitnessPal.com.
Attempt to be your pal?
It's, you know, I mean, it's...
Is there an avatar?
It's helpful.
Clippy. Is it like Clippy?
In the way that pals are.
Does he say, hey, I noticed you ate a little too much carb yesterday. Might want to bring it down a notch.
It will tell you when you've eaten too much, yes.
Okay, that's good. I like that.
So I've been using that, and people have asked me about this because they know I've been losing weight and stuff, and it's tremendously helpful because it does kind of turn it into a bit of a meta game. You know, you want to stay under your calories and... you get, you know, little, you know, it says you've logged in for 30 days in a row. Congratulations. And you can go and see that the weight that you've lost. And
this is like that TED talk where they talked about metagames.
How they can turn anything
being attached
into
to every
people like a chance in real life. Yeah. So it definitely has. I honestly don't think I would have been anything like as successful as I have been in the weight that I've lost without the help of this gadget. So if you are serious about trying to lose weight, I would recommend using something like this.
Yeah, I used this with the Fitbit and with the body media thing.
It's great.
It helps a ton.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not something you have to do indefinitely, but it gives you – if you don't have any – if like me, you were a person who had no idea how many calories are in normal food, then this is a very good way to immediately understand that.
I mean, and the other reason why it's helpful is what it encourages you to do is actually know how much of – food you're eating, because this is something that where people go way off the rails, like they don't realize how small serving sizes are. They look at calories. Cereals are good. I mean, you shouldn't be eating cereal anyway, but a good example is you look at the typical serving size on a bowl on a packet of Fruit Loops or Honey Nut Cheerios or whatever. Just as an experiment, go to your cupboard and get some cereal and pour whatever the serving size is. It will probably be either half a cup or three quarters of a cup into a measuring jug.
Yeah.
And realize how much cereal – you're probably eating 4 or 5 servings of cereal when you fill up your bowl with cereal in the morning, because it's almost nothing per serving. And so, you know, that combined with a little measuring scale, you know, you can figure out like, well, the steak that I had for dinner was exactly 10 ounces and I know how many calories that is. You don't have to estimate, because when you do rough estimation, it's very, very easy to go over the number of calories that you're actually eating. So these little websites will give you a good – sense of whether or not you're going over your calorie, you know, t- targets and things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not something.
Just keep
me
honest.
Yeah, it was just something that was good for me to know that, oh, hey, a 4-ounce portion of steak is what I should be eating, not a 16-ounce portion.
And it just installs a mindset where you actually do want to know exactly what you're eating and not, you know, not just going, oh, that looks about the right amount, because that's how you start to go back on the slippery slope.
So, I mean, something like that in a scale is all you really need. Yeah. I mean, it's really – because you can do everything in grams. It's really straightforward.
Yes. It's very, very, very easy to do. We have a little scale, which is great. What you do is you put the bowl or whatever receptacle is on the thing first, and then it zeroes out.
Yeah, you tear it. Yeah.
It zeroes that out with the bowl on it, so then you can figure out whatever food you want to put in.
That's called tearing.
It's very – and it's a great feature.
Yeah.
But what I've actually been testing was we got the Ubisoft Your Shape Fitness Connect game at Christmas.
Oh, I tried this.
And like many fitness products, it sat around in its wrapper unused.
Yeah.
You know, we had an exercise bike for a while, which basically just turned into a clothes horse.
Yeah. Well, they're good to hang clothes on because the handles and the seat, and you can dry clothes there. Absolutely. That's what exactly.
And it got kind of depressing. We eventually got rid of that. But, you know, I've been trying to be more exercisey and more healthy, and I've been working on the treadmill every day. And I thought, what other exercises can I do? This is part of the reason why we brought the Connect upstairs, because you don't want to have to rearrange the living room every time you want to work out.
That's what I do.
And also, you don't want to be working out like in the living room when people are coming and going. Like, you want to be able to go into like your whatever room is designated as your gym, close the door.
Yeah.
Because I don't want.
Have you bought workout clothes at this point?
I just put on like a t-shirt and a pair of shorts.
Okay.
But I don't want
cargo shorts or like are you?
No, I actually have like real exercising shorts. But I don't. You know, regardless of how good I may look, I don't want people watching me doing jumping jacks and nonsense. It's just embarrassing.
You should just that. You have that big window that overlooks half the city. You should just do that.
Well, right, fortunately, there. It's high enough that people can't really
That's
see
probably
me.
True.
But so we set it up, and it's great. You know, it does all the. You know, you can see you, and it says, "Oh, hello. How heavy are you? And what are your goals? Would you like to lose weight? Would you like to do this or that?" And I said, "I want to lose
weight."
Would
you like to lose weight?
And it said,
"What are the other options?
Well, like build muscle,
sculpting,
stuff like that.
Toning. Yeah, build muscle, increase your strength. All kinds of different things."
I would like to make my ass bigger.
And so I gave my, you know, you put in your age and your weight and your goals, and it gets a sense of your exercise level. And I made the mistake. It says, "Do you exercise occasionally or every day or, you know, never really?" And I actually have been doing a little bit on the treadmill every day. So I put every day, which it goes, okay, we're going to ratchet things up for you. And then I made a mistake of selecting the breaker sweat workout, which turned out to be like the fucking Iron Man triathlon mode.
What you really needed was the option that was barely not sedentary.
Well, it was, and it's not even about fitness level; it's about your muscles. Because I'm actually much fitter now than I used to be. I can walk like up a tall flight of stairs without losing my breath. I couldn't do that 6 months ago.
Oh yeah.
So my aerobic fitness level is generally better, but my muscles aren't in any way in great shape. Like my leg, like for example, the exercise that this thing had me do was a lot of squats and, you know, where you just kind of like sit on an invisible chair and then stand up again and you go up and down and you do squat punching and leg curls and basic aerobic exercises. 20 minutes later, the front muscles in my thighs, I wanted to cut them out with a Swiss Army knife. And I still cannot walk down a flight of stairs comfortably. My, you know, all the lactic acid and all the things that happen when you work out muscles that don't usually get exercised. The weird thing is, because of the particular exercises that you do, I can walk up a flight of stairs fine, but walking downstairs, because it's different muscles that
you
use.
So you need to put a fire pole
is
in.
It's agonizing.
I've
actually been walking down the stairs.
You hold the railing?
Both feet on one step at a time, holding the banister, holding the railing like an old person.
Hopping?
Like an old age pensioner.
I'm telling you, you should put a fire pole in. You have an open place for it. You
a
just
fire
slide
pole
down.
Would be pretty sweet.
Be awesome.
Okay,
so that's good.
But what I've discovered is there is actually a pretty good way to get your exercise. It tracks you. I got put a little iPhone app on there, and it gives you rewards. Yay, you burned 100 calories. Here's your achievement. And, so, you know, you feel good about it.
So I put – is this the original version, or have they updated it since Kinect came out?
I mean they've updated
the software,
but there's no new boxed version or anything.
So Gina tested this out right about the time Kinect came out, because she at the time was the only person I knew who was exercising. And her feedback on that was that there was too much downtime between exercises.
I did not find that a problem.
But she does like the crazy Jillian Michaels,
right?
Like the P90X and all that kind of shit.
Yeah.
Where they just beat the hell out of you for 45 minutes.
Well, you know what? You should get her. Apparently, this new one, UFC trainer, will fucking kick your ass.
I don't want to teach her how to kick my ass.
Yeah, so like Muay Thai.
That's the last thing I need.
And focus mitts.
No.
And, yeah.
No, I don't want that.
Yeah.
She'll
break your neck.
Oh, yeah.
Put you in the octagon.
Other stuff we've been testing. I put iOS 5 Beta 3 on my phone yesterday.
Now, this added something that you've wanted for a very long time, did it not?
SMS tones.
Custom ringtone. Custom text.
No tones, longer yes. Can we hear the complaint.
Thank glass.
God. That you won't be able to. I don't want so about many, that anymore.
I had so many choices. I couldn't decide. So I just went.
So
back
you
to
can
the
now
one
import whatever ringtone you want.
Yeah, I'm trying to decide between the Star Trek to Next Generation communicator
that
beeps,
be which is the perfect
that's right. That's, yep.
A perfect. Super Mario Brothers jumping sound. Or maybe the coin pickup.
Coin pickup is better.
Yeah.
That is Will Wheaton's Android text alert sound.
I did not know that, but it's less original now.
Yeah.
Yeah, or something else that I'm not going to spoil on the podcast. So.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm excited about that. The notifications are awesome.
What's
fantastic.
My text sound going to be? Ooh, maybe it should be a fart.
I think you're...
Because then if you keep your phone in your pocket every time you get a text, it sounds like you farted.
I think that's the best idea I've ever heard.
I've been able to change mine for years.
Get out of here. You're done. I'm going to have you deported. It's
Android
good.
People.
It's good. We'll do more QuickBooks as it gets closer to release.
Any other big changes?
You can sync over the phone now.
Ooh,
over
Wi-Fi.
So this is making me wonder if perhaps the next version of the iPhone will have no ports whatsoever.
No.
I don't think. No. I think that's too soon.
Well, you're still going to have to charge it.
Well, my touchpad, you can charge wirelessly. You
no,
put on
they're
a
not, not
going to
do
pad.
They're not going to do that.
You can't do that because then how are you going to take that? How are you going to charge that in other places other than your computer or your home? You're going to carry
jobs
with you.
Jobs would love that though.
Yeah, it's perfect for Jobs because it's completely unuser serviceable at that point.
Yes,
there's nothing you can do to that other than hit the buttons and plug in some headphones.
Probably make it harder to jailbreak too.
Almost certainly.
And you can't get water in it. The port.
Yeah, less points of failure.
Quiet, Chloe. Last thing we're going to talk about today, Google Plus notifications in Google Docs and Gmail and all that.
So angry at Google.
Now, this is not
Chloe,
really...
Come here. What are you barking at? Oh, she might have to go out. Is that it?
She's getting feisty.
You said the two words.
Come here. Come here. Do you want some attention? I'm going to have to go back and cut this part of the podcast out now. Look what you've done. Maybe I won't. Anyway, So
this, I mean, Google Plus notifications, this is not so much you testing it as it's been testing you.
I was trying to write something last night, and, you know, they've added Google Plus notifications. If you're in Google Plus beta, they've added notifications to that bar that's across all the Google apps
now. Has your
Gmail,
your calendar.
Yeah, exactly.
Docs, yeah.
It is a fucking nightmare. I mean, I've been...
It's useless.
It's bad for a couple of reasons. One is that you can't control what goes in there,
yep.
And it is unbelievably spammy.
I don't care if people are following.
Right.
All I want are certain notifications.
Yes, you do. Once there's cloud attached,
you'll be able to filter that eventually.
But the bigger problem is I would like to turn that off in things that I want to be able to concentrate on. Because I have one of the best tips I ever got from Lifehacker, and this was years and years and years ago, was turn off all pop-up notifications, all chimes, all of that bullshit. The more of that you turn off, the more productive you're going to be.
When I really need to concentrate, I turn off my mail, my IM, anything else that can ding me gets turned off.
I just disable that stuff. I check mail twice a day.
Yeah.
I check Twitter obsessively nonstop throughout the
day. Oh,
yeah.
My God. It's terrible. Yeah.
No, it's perfect. It means I check mail on my own terms, and it teaches people that they shouldn't expect an immediate
mail
response
controls
from
me.
But what if people want to instant message you?
They can instant message me. It pops up. It flashes in the taskbar. It doesn't pop up. It doesn't make a noise.
Okay, it's still a notification though.
But it just—I can choose when to look at that.
Yeah, but the point that we're going to here,
yes,
is that, and I've seen many other people make this point.
The fact that I can't turn that off and it's real spammy while I'm trying to work in Google Docs means I'm not going to use Google Docs for writing anymore.
Yeah, but you're saying that you can ignore that kind of notification as long as it doesn't make a noise.
No, not when it's a giant ass red button
red
in the
button
top of the window.
The right.
So this
top
is the thing. I honestly do believe that Google put a lot of psychological thought into this and concluded that a red button is something that people cannot ignore clicking on.
I'm looking at one right now. Can I click it?
If you don't click it, you're going to go crazy.
Eight dudes have followed you and somebody posted a comment on something that you liked a while
ago. It looks like a huge red thing that you just have to press. And so here's the problem. Dan Stapleton and many other people have made the same point in the last week that you're making now, which is it's great that you have that bar and you're in the Google ecosystem, Docs, Calendar, Mail, Reader, you know, Google Plus, whatever you want. But as long as you're in that ecosystem, and let's say you're trying to working Google Docs, for example, which is where you're probably trying to be productive, that red thing is always going to be...
Well, it just keeps changing.
Yes.
It just, it's always going higher. And then
are you saying that you cannot, that you are not strong enough to just ignore it?
I am going to tell you, I am a relatively simple man. That has been established many times over the course of the last few years. This is a giant red button that may have something interesting in it. It's impossible for me to ignore.
Yeah, it's tough. And this is why I actually installed the Chrome extension, which puts that red button in your actual browser.
Immediately uninstalled.
So that you don't have to be, I had it for like 5 minutes and I had to go.
Yeah.
That's why I like Rock Belt. That's why I can't use Rock Belt.
So yeah, I think they are going to have to add a two levels of feature here. One, to filter it so that like only notify me if someone on my friends list or whatever contacts me. I don't want to know that like people I don't give a shit about have started following me. Mm-hmm. And also on a second level, just turn it off completely.
Well, would you want to turn just off the red button, or do you want an option to hide the entire black Google bar?
I don't mind the black Google bar.
No, the bar is fine. It's just that they've added and I understand why they want to add the social right into the ecosystem, because that's obviously the big strength that they have.
Well, but it's going to impact people using their other services. Because I cannot use Google Docs to write.
They need
while
to
that red button
they
is
need
there.
To let you turn that thing
right.
off.
Because on a per app basis.
Yeah.
The other thing that
can
my secret
it to
hope,
a tweet button.
My secret hope, though, is that this will give them impetus to make a write room style feature for Google Docs. Oh. Because that would be amazing.
My advice to you is just use Pages, because Pages has a great full screen feature that's just like Write Room.
Your advice to me is always to use the Apple product, Gary.
But it does exactly what I want it to do.
And I actually bought it yesterday to test OS X.
So Write Room is cool as well, though, because it does have that kind of old fashioned war games green text on the black background look.
That's the best part of it.
The amount of stares that I get at coffee shops for using that thing is baffling.
Let's face it, you go to those coffee shops just to get those stares.
You're looking for indie rock.
You are one of those people.
Right.
What's that band on your shirt? Oh, you don't.
You haven't heard of it.
We're running short on time, but let's take a couple of questions.
Hey, Tested Crew. This is Ryan from Indianapolis, Indiana. I was just curious if Will could talk about why he's chosen to use Google's DNS as opposed to a service like OpenDNS. Thanks, and always be testing.
It's real easy. I've used both over the years. OpenDNS stopped working right with Apple TV and Xbox Live, so I was getting slow downloads because they're having to come across the whole network instead of Akamai, which is the local edge bandwidth provider, which is why you get crazy fast downloads from services like Apple and Steam and Xbox Live and all that stuff. Google's DNS server, the 8.8.8.8, seems to work pretty well, and also the number was much easier to remember than OpenDNS's 250, whatever. I can't even remember now. They're both good. I mean, I have no beef with either, really. And it's entirely possible that the OpenDNS problem has been solved since the last time I used it. Do you guys use either of those, or do you use your ISP's DNS servers?
ISP.
Okay. See, I stopped doing that when they started doing that lame
search thing.
Yeah. The mistyped URL.
It goes into
the,
yep.
Yeah, that's super frustrating. But anyway, next question. That was quick.
Hey guys, my name is Jason. I'm from Fullerton, California in the OC. An interesting fact about Fullerton is that Jenna Hayes was born in Fullerton. You guys know who that is, especially you, Gary. What a... Anyways, my question had to do with FPS.
She on 30
laptop.
Rock?
When my laptop is being charged, I get 60 so. FPS on most games that I play. But when my laptop is just running on battery, it only gets 30 FPS. I was wondering if you guys knew a way to fix this. I tried putting it on high performance, but that doesn't work regardless of whether it's charging or not. It seems like I only get 60 FPS when my laptop is being charged, but I don't want to keep my laptop plugged in all the time because I don't want to overcharge and kill my battery. Also to note, my computer isn't a powerful rig by any means, but it can run most games like Team Fortress 2 pretty well. All right, dudes, thanks for the help.
Speed step.
Does speed step let you control that stuff? Oh, it's definitely a speed step problem.
I think it's definitely a speed step problem. You can turn that off in the BIOS.
So what's happening is when you have your computer plugged in, it runs everything at full speed. Memory, CPU, chipset, all that stuff. When you unplug it to make your battery last longer, it slows everything down to maybe not the bare minimum it needs, but to a lower performance state so that the battery lasts longer. This is probably something that's going to change on a manufacturer by manufacturer basis. So you're going to have to go look at either your – God, I'm going to tell you to look at the manuals. I'm sorry. Going to have to go look at the manuals or typically switching to high performance mode does actually fix this in my experience.
Then it runs at full?
Then it runs it at full clocks. But it may be that you need to go into the user settings, the advanced power settings and change it there. There's like minimum, maximum clock speed settings for each of the power modes, whether it's high performance, maximum battery, video viewing, whatever you have. And if it's not a gaming laptop, which is kind of sounds like it isn't, you're going to have to maybe call the manufacturer and talk to them about how to force it to not use speed step. You may have to go into the BIOS.
All right.
There you go.
We've got one more question. This one's kind of bad audio quality, but it's a good question about cameras, so I'm going to play it anyway. I apologize.
Hello, Tiss and crew. Will, Norm, Anna, Gary, whoever decides to be on. My name is Marley Silverbrand, and M. Silverbrand on the Tested Forums. My question, and may I add this is my very first submitted question for the Tested Podcast, is about DSLRs. I'm a photography student right now, but shockingly, I've never owned a DSLR. I own a couple of fake DSLRs, but never an actual one. I was wondering what would be a good DSLR to start out with. I've been currently looking at the Canon T2i and the Nikon D3100. My price range will vary from $800 to $1,000, but I'll go over $1,000 if it is necessary. Thanks for the help, and always be testing. And for hometown trivia, I don't really have any hometown trivia because my hometown is rather boring, but I always tell people that my hometown is 45 minutes away from Yosemite National Park. So, yeah.
That's cool. All right.
See ya.
You know, there's a lot of mouses in Yosemite National Park.
Mises.
Yeah, Mises.
I hate Mises to pieces.
Oh, my God.
He lives in a house near there.
Okay, so starter DSLR.
As a photography student, I'm assuming you're probably not going to be taking very much video. I could be wrong, but I mean, that's something you should probably consider because most of the cameras you get these days will include some sort of video functionality.
Yeah, like that's it's a toss-in bonus for free almost.
It's a toss-in bonus, but it also will, you know, the T3, which T3i. Is the successor. Yeah, T3i is known for having better video than the T2i. If you don't really care about shooting video, you really can't go wrong with the T2i.
This is a Canon?
This is the
Rebel.
Canon, yeah.
Okay.
I can't actually speak much for the Nikon because I don't test Nikon out, but a good rule of thumb for DSLRs in general is go to a place where you can actually hold these things in your hand and use them for like 10-15 minutes, get a sense for the weight, get a sense for the buttons.
And then go buy
it
from Amazon?
Yeah, basically.
Well, the thing is with the Rebel series and T3i, it feels really small.
Yeah.
Really small. Like even like the 30D I'm using, like the heft, I want that.
I bought one for Leah for Christmas, and I think it's a Rebel. She really likes it, and it wasn't a super expensive one.
No.
I think it counts as an entry level one. If she listens to this, she can probably post in the forums which one it is. But she likes it.
I mean, and the thing is, these days you can buy a generation back and not like you can save a lot of money by buying a generation back one. Because the thing that's important is more than the body, in my experience, has been that you buy good glass. So you want good lenses rather than get as good a body as you can buy, but the lenses will last multiple generations. It's like buying a monitor for your computer.
Unless you really want to shoot video, because right now video
is a new
thing. So every new generation is going to have significantly better video recording.
Yeah, but he should be able to get a T3i with a starter lens kit for like $100,000, right?
Yo, definitely. I mean, my girlfriend Hillary is actually doing this right now where she's trying to decide between a T2i and potentially a T3. And the price difference she's found is only about $100, which I think is kind of wacky.
And that's Canadian, so it's like $35.
No,
here,
you know,
right?
It's the same damn thing.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Did you hear the news article from last night that Apple is considering adjusting its international retail prices to be in line with America?
Wow.
Yeah. That was a rumor.
That would be fantastic news.
I know.
Yeah.
But if I did not have to pay – if I got to pay, you know, $30 for line as opposed to $35.
Oh, yeah.
I'm fine with that.
That's a $5 savings.
But anyways, yes, cameras.
T2i, there's equivalents on the Nikon side.
Definitely. Also, too, I mean, you should – like you said, you were a photography student. I would look in to see, you know, what lenses and what bodies and things like that your school has to rent. Because if you are a school that has, you know, all Canon bodies and lenses, totally go with Canon. Because the ability to rent all of those lenses and use them with your body is a big deal.
Yeah, and the nice thing is the Canon – for the most part, Canon are not – like you can use Nikon lenses with all Nikon bodies.
Yep.
And you can use Canon lenses with all Nikon bodies with a few notable exceptions.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like whether you buy the $5,000 body or the $800 body, the lenses are the same. Yeah. Which is really good.
Mm-hmm.
And I lied. We actually do have one more question, but it's very short.
Hey, Tested Podcast. This is Ryan from Huntersville, North Carolina. I have a question regarding selling my computer. I'll be going to college in about a month, and I'm planning on buying one of the new MacBook Airs. I currently have a 13-inch unibody MacBook, and I'm hoping to sell it. However, before I do, I need to get all my personal info, passwords, credit card info, and stuff like that off the machine. What would be the most thorough way to go about this? Oh, hometown trivia. Before moving to the beautiful state of NC, I was born in the city of Akron, Ohio, which is not only the birthplace of the most horrible man in the world, LeBron James, but is also the rubber capital of the world, which is
rubber.
Pretty cool, I guess. Anyways, thanks a bunch, guys. Yes. Love the show. See ya.
So,
some of that rubber probably went into your MacBook.
Yeah, this is particularly apt. Norm, what was your plan for removing data from your old MacBook?
It's formatting it.
Okay, so you—I mean, clean install is the way to go, right?
Yeah, full clean install. Right, yep. I should wipe everything.
If you really want to be super careful from that install DVD, if you open up Disk Utility, you can set it to do a zero out the drive. That'll take a few hours.
With both Windows and Mac, you can format, but partition doesn't actually do the format.
Right, so the data will still be there.
It creates a new partition.
Yeah. So if you're really worried about it, zero out the drive. I think that's probably a good idea if you're giving it to a stranger. Yep. If you're selling it to a friend or family member, just format it and reinstall.
Not a big deal.
I don't recommend try uninstalling and manually removing stuff.
No, that's a bad idea.
That's not secure, and you'll never catch everything. You'll always leave something behind.
Well, I mean, there is a secure way to do that. The secure way to do that is to wipe everything you can find, create a new username, delete your old username. But it's still better to format. It's better for the new user to.
Well, yeah, they want a machine that feels like it's back to factory settings anyway. So,
So that'll do it for questions this week. If you have a question, record it with a microphone, please, or headset at least on your phone. Send it in any format but WMA. Make it under 10 megabytes, under a minute. The shorter the question, the better. This week we had some real long ones, and I just didn't play them because I'm not going to play a two-minute question.
The guys that you played, they exercised proper question discipline.
We had some 15, 16, 17-second questions in that left nothing out. It was perfect.
Yeah.
Hometown Trivia is appreciated, though. I like that part.
Just to illustrate how this is enforced, Will, I remember last week we had one guy whose question was who actually got on, but his question was so meandering.
I think he took a bong rip. I think I heard the bong rip in the background during that question.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it went on and on and on. And his question got dumped.
Yeah.
Right?
Because we decided it just went on the podcast. Too long.
Yep.
Yeah. That's the kind of harsh realities we face in this day of limited question answering time.
Absolutely.
We'll answer questions every week. Podcast at tested.com. 1 minute, 10 megabytes.
Also, a question at the end of their questions. You say keep on testing or always be testing? Talk about this in a video.
I think always be testing.
Always be testing.
That's on the official coffee mug, isn't it?
Some people say keep on testing.
Keep on testing is accepted.
Don't like that.
It's non-preferred, though. I mean, we will not turn anyone away who's
It's like irregardless.
Testing.
It's not real English, but people can use it if they choose.
Motherfucker, I was trying to bomb that out while sitting on the BART train, crammed in with a million other people, and trying to get it out in time for the station to leave.
I didn't call you on it at the time. I thought
that was very kind of you, but 1,000 other people did.
I know, because I knew many other people.
Every time somebody bitches at me about something like that, clout goes on up.
It's true. Maybe it was a deliberate troll.
No,
smart.
No, that would be a Witta move. I wouldn't do that. But on that note, we're signing out for this week. For Matt Braga, Gary Witta, Norman Chan, and myself, Will Smith, we'll be back next week with another edition of This Is Only a Test. Stay tuned for some fake outtakes.
Hi there. I didn't see you.
Test it.
I like fruit, and I like being a ninja, and this game is for me because it's called Fruit Ninja.
The TF2 server is back up.
Yes, just in time for TNT. Great news.
What classes is everybody playing?
Well, I'm playing the game. I'm playing, I think.
I think you have to play
I'm on
class.
The keys.
I don't know what I'm doing yet. I hope
you're on the couch. You can if you want to sub out and play. That's awesome.
I may want to rotate in and out because painful to watch other people play TF2 and not be playing myself.
So Norm, I think is not going to play this time. You played last time.
I played last time. Also, I realized when we all went back to TF2 last week, earlier this week, I played for 45 minutes. I realized I am not as good as I used to be, and so
Dropped. People are like, where did Norm go?
Well, I took a phone call, but
there was a girl.
I'm not as good.
Norm
as
is speechless.
That was when we played. You're not enjoying it anymore. No. If you're not winning.
Once my KD,
see his ethos
and it was only
in action.
3-1, and I was like, that's not acceptable.
I was glad to see that. Like, I mean, I'm just as fucking great as I ever was.
Yeah, you can yell at people like nobody I've ever played with,
and also get the most kills.
You do get kills. Yeah, well, but you also were you and I and Norm all have the benefit of TF2 server moderate fame.
That's
where
thing.
Every medic on the server will attach to you.
I well, but it also means you're a target because people want to.
It doesn't.
Wanna,
if you have four medics on you, it doesn't matter.
And I don't want to disappoint those medics.
I almost never get medics. You walk around with a medic fucking
two
up,
medics.
Practically up your
yeah,
asshole
usually two.
All the time.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. I like
oh my
that.
God,
thanks,
I'm
guys.
Healing Will. And
thanks, guys.
I did actually have a couple of really good Ubers thanks to some
yeah,
caring like medics.
I got an Uber crits Uber. The other day.
Oh,
so I had an
nice.
Uber, a crits during the first Uber,
holy
and then just
shit.
As the first Uber ran out, I thought I was like, oh fuck, I've gone way too far, I'm gonna die. And then another Uber came.
I had forgotten just how
magical.
Much fun that game is.
The game's
it's
awesome.
So great. I think I may be back in again for a while.
It's so silly and just awesome. And like, we're playing a good mix of old maps and new maps.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
It should be a lot of fun for everybody. We will be playing this afternoon.
Very excited about that.
Yeah.
Evan over at PC Gamer linked this awesome map earlier that I
yes.
wish we could add into the rotation. Where,
we can.
Can
we won't do it for TNT today,
yeah.
but yeah, we'll do
but,
it later.
Blue team starts in a crash plane, and you have to make your way through, I guess, these runes.
Is this an official Valve map? Or?
No, this is a community map, but
okay.
It looks beautiful.
Sounds good.
So let's see. That's on the list. We're doing that for TNT today. Thursday night tested.
By the time people
this
are
will
hearing
probably
this,
be
it's
gone.
Probably over.
But if you're a subscriber, you can go back and watch again later on Giant Bomb.
That's true.
And the server's going to be up.
Yeah, the server's up always.
Yeah.
So except for when it's down. So we're
if it's down, please tell us.
That's
we can
a
make
tough
it go
server to
up.
Get on at the best of times.
Yeah, it's been a little packed lately. Especially since the free update.
I've discovered the new trick is don't announce that you're going to go play Team Fortress before you're actually in the server.
Yeah, if you the night that you guys said, hey, we're going to go play Team Fortress at 7:30, holy shit. We were getting like 150
maybe
connections
we shouldn't
a minute.
Announce it.
No, you just hop on and then announce.
You couldn't even get me in the game. That was brutal.
Thing is, if the server's already full, then there's no point announcing it because you're just going to create – it's not like Turntable where more and more people can come in.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
Turntable TF2.
Right.
Just to be clear, it is a 24-player server. I know that there's a demand. If demand continues into the future, we will add a second server.
Oh yeah.
I do not believe in 32-player servers.
It breaks the game.
Morally reprehensible.
No. Yeah.
I might turn on fast respawns today, though, just so that when I'm killed.
Oh, it's so funny because I was just about to say that's the other thing that I absolutely detest.
I don't like
not
it either.
Join instant respawn servers.
But for the sake of TNT moving and being entertaining, I think I might do instant respawn today. I don't know. We'll see.
So if we set up a second server, would you consider doing
no.
sick? No. A specific game type?
No.
No? Just stick with
let
stock
the people
rotation?
Vote.
Yeah, okay.
That's
true. We have
voting's
map,
on.
Yeah,
people
can
well,
that.
I don't think it is, though, because we got stuck on a map. One of the maps in the TF2 rotation is called Freight, and a lot of people don't like it.
That's
and
the one with the train.
Yeah, we were stuck. Freight. We were stuck, and people went, I wish we could vote to get off this
you can
map.
Vote.
RTM.
Well, they were saying it wasn't working.
RTV is off. We turned that off. We're using the default voting now because it works better.
So how does that work? I
you
haven't
go
actually
go to the menu
tried
and press the check mark that says vote and,
really?
And you vote. Yeah.
So there's no like key command that you can just mash to.
No, it's. I'm sorry.
Valve.
So back to the last week's podcast, we actually had a comment in the podcast forums from
the
compositor.
Ah.
Oh, yeah.
The question.
We had a bunch of, we had actually multiples.
Yes. Two people responded.
And a couple people emailed too. So
and
thanks, guys.
So the question was how do. Special effects studios add film grain
or match film grain.
Match film grain to footage shot on film.
Right. So like in Lord of the Rings, when they're putting Gollum into a scene that is mostly shot, and then there's Gollum. We weren't sure whether they like shoot it with no film grain and then add it all in post or what. And we got a bunch of good answers.
It is manually added.
Yep.
Okay. But only to the effects.
Only to the effects, and they try to match it to the grain, which is different for different scenes based on lighting.
Right. Yes. And like it's based on exposure and light and all that kind of stuff. So really cool. It was great
to
get the answers from you guys.
What's interesting is that they before they add the grain, they deteriorate the CG because adding the grain adds a bit of sharpness. So that's how they get to match.
Interesting.
And it's never done to the original plate, of course.
Interesting. So yeah, we have that. We got that.
So that's great. A couple of pieces, a couple of orders of business that we really need to take care of.
Well, let's talk about the Amazing Race thing.
Absolutely,
first.
That's what I want to talk about.
Yeah, there's only two things left to talk about. In
people, people on the forums are very excited about.
Last night, I tweeted it, and when I went home, Gina was like, "Hey, I saw you did your application." She's like, "Oh yeah." And then I said, and I opened up search.twitter, and I put it for @AmazingRace_CBS.
That is a saved search right now, and if you look
on.
We are by far leading, except for they got a bunch of Emmys last night.
Wait, have you already unleashed the hounds?
Don't do anything yet. We want tweets to start on Monday or Tuesday of next week.
So I'm gonna start the
smack talk. So there's an official Amazing Race CBS account. Will, when announcing that we sent our application in, included them in the tweet, and people have been responding to Will's tweet.
And CCing and RTing.
So that will show up in their feed.
Yes.
Okay.
But if you search their feed, which is AmazingRace_CBS, you can see other people who have said, oh, I just applied as well, you know. And Jerry Breckreiner, you know, CCs it. And this morning, a ton of tweets came in because of the Emmy nominations.
Right.
And Amazing Race got seven Emmys, I think.
Because it always wins CBS. Best reality show, right?
Mm-hmm. If you look at the other people who have applied, no competition.
Well, in the tweet category.
In the people who've applied and tweeted them. First of all,
don't get cocky, Chan.
People don't rally around
them. They could be
them.
Listening to this.
Yeah, well, I would be.
And also, they would be dropped immediately.
Well, this is very exciting because I got to see your audition video.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we can't just
We're not going to publish. We can't make it public for a while.
Right.
Yet. And Gary, without giving away what we actually did in it, what was your reaction?
Because I thought it was very good. I don't know, you know, necessarily what they're looking for, but you said that the guidelines are to not try and do anything too wacky, but just be straightforward and focus on the relationship of the two people.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you guys did have the advantage of you got the Whiskey Media Studios and you got Anna to, you know, come in and shoot the video for you. So it all looks very professional.
We're going to have to pay her.
But it's not like you didn't do anything wacky like one of your live show stunts or anything.
We were keeping it real.
You did include some clips, which I thought was very good because that demonstrates that you guys are, you know, game to look foolish and you don't care if you do silly stuff. But you basically just talked about the two of your relationship. And I like the fact that you pimped the fact that you have lots of Twitter followers because, you know, that's a plus.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was very straightforward and good, and your personalities came out. And I think
Norm was kind of mean.
I hope they realized.
I liked it when he showed the pie chart of your Twitter followers, and there was a little fraction of like, well, you know, here's Will's mother, and you said my mother's not on Twitter, and Norm was like, that's what you think.
That was good. Was a mom joke.
So there was some good humor in there. And I thought the clips that you showed were very good. I thought a couple of times you used a little bit of tech jargon that may have been a little bit kind of inclusive or exclusive. Like, you know, not everyone would understand the words that you were using.
Like phone?
Spam bots.
Oh.
You know, things like that.
That was Norm.
But that's okay because knowing the Amazing Race folks, they'll paint you guys as like the uber geeks of the competition. And, you know, everything will be very...
So, I mean, eventually I'm sure you'll release this video, but you did.
Yeah, so
you were able to release a still, which I thought was also very
good. Well, I released a still
yesterday, we took a couple photos.
Matt Braga was kind enough to
the application process.
You looked very intrepid.
Yeah, the application process is actually just a web form, and it's very simple. You don't have to fill out long essays. There's only one writing bit, which is 70
words. How do you submit the video?
It's uploaded.
You upload it.
Web form. Mm-hmm. But they do need a photo of you, your teammate, and then also a photo of you guys together. And so Matt was generous enough to help us take a photo using his good
lens. You didn't use that very intrepid photograph.
We didn't because it was
Norm's face
lens,
was creepy.
And
looked creepy, actually.
Wide-angle lens.
We both looked creepy.
Yeah, wide-angle lens. And it looked like we had Photoshop heads on our bodies. Like we were like bobbleheads.
So what did you use?
We looked like bobbleheads. We used kind of goofy standalone photos and a relatively straight
I call it the hero pose.
Yeah, hero pose. It was like a reality show hero pose or our approximation thereof.
Right, right.
So the deal is they should contact us if they want to talk to us more around August, the middle of August. So I'd say if we haven't heard anything by like 15th or 20th of August, we'll post the video.
Wait, so when will you find out?
Middle of August is when they should contact
15th.
Us. Yeah.
I think you guys have got a very good shot.
We'll see. I'm cautiously optimistic.
It's going to be nuts.
20,000 people
on that shot.
Yeah.
Apply.
Can you imagine?
20,000 people.
Or 20,000 teams. Yeah. 40,000 people.
And there are two stages of interviews post. I would just like to make it to the next one step at a time.
That's my goal is to get a call from somebody on my cell phone. And hopefully AT&T won't fuck me.
Please don't let it be a tested reader punking Will because now Will's cell phone number is out.
Oh, the wheels are turning now.
Oh, that would be the worst.
Man.
You would be permanently banned. I don't block people very often, but I would block you for that.
You blocked me last week.
Well, you deserved it.
I did.
I was in the Will Twitter doghouse for a couple of days.
I didn't just block you. I blocked and reported spam, too.
Well, no, you just reported spam, but reported spam also blocks.
Well, maybe I did both. Maybe I blocked you in addition.
I thought it was hilarious that you actually found out about that live on TNT.
Oh, motherfucker. I was so pissed.
I didn't even expect that, but that was great because the chat just exploded.
Oh, dude, it hadn't been up for 20 seconds by the time people were like, you might want to check Twitter, Will.
But really, I mean, how is that chafing?
Man.
bragging you're
what
fired.
What I thought was funny was that when I, because I looked at your at replies, and a lot of people actually were giving you real advice. I wonder if they thought you were the other Will Smith.
Yeah, I get a lot of real advice. Other thing is, the Voyager episode set list has been locked
down. So this is our other order
this
of business.
This is some other serious business.
Norm and I have been working very hard on this.
I looked at the list. I saw your cuts. I saw your additions. I feel like it's a – I think you start with the year in hell.
Wait,
first of all, this is not for you to reveal. Gary and I
Norman, I put a lot of effort into this.
I wanted to give you
This was very different to the TNG.
Where you involved Ryan.
We invited Brian and Brad, who was very – I've never seen Brad so passionate.
Oh, it was heated debate in the conference room.
Oh, my goodness. Brad's usually kind of a fairly, understated guy.
Yeah.
And he said, no Klingons.
He was like, Mr. Smith goes to Washington or something. I mean, he really filibustered the whole place. We actually had people coming in asking us to keep it down, remember?
Yeah.
I mean, it was pretty –
yeah, there was real work going on, as I recall.
Pretty passionate.
And the purpose of the TNG one was to – spectrum of TNG episodes.
And we picked a lot of episodes and we had a lot of people. It was a big event. This is going to be a little more.
I'm really hungry.
This is going to be a little more low key.
This is 8 episodes.
Norm and I, we limited to 8 episodes, which is because that's kind of where we started to lose the plot last time. And we didn't invite a lot of people. Just Norm and I were the two people that came up with the list.
We got that.
And we did invite reader suggestions on Twitter. And then you ignored
all of them.
That's not true. We didn't ignore them. We ignored most of them.
This list.
So you, Will, why don't you and I
what's interesting
go through
is,
this
okay, we didn't
real
want
quick.
Necessarily we didn't want to
talk into the microphone, Norm.
We didn't necessarily want to have the entire spectrum of Voyager episodes. Like, we didn't need episodes showing you who 7 of 9 was. We assumed people would know.
Right.
We just wanted
a good sample
of episodes that we would watch by themselves.
Yeah.
And maybe one that was ridiculous.
We did have certain rules like no Neelix episodes, no
Kes. Good policy.
Yeah.
Yeah,
The interesting thing is, of the 7 seasons, our first season, because we have these
Didn't Kes turn into an erogenous cloud?
She kind of did.
She did.
Wow.
She totally did. She got really old, fast,
uh-huh.
and then turned into an erogenous cloud and time traveled and became evil.
Wow. That's fucked.
So the first episode we have is actually from season 4.
Yeah,
so
we don't have any from the very early
season
3.
It wasn't
because Voyager didn't start to get even like fairly decent until like 3rd or 4th season.
So they got rid of Kes.
Basically, anything post-Kes is good. In the same way that anything post-Riker Beard in Trek is okay, is okay. Mm-hmm. Anything once
that's
Kes
the turning
is left
point.
Is okay.
And so we had
okay.
a Google Doc where we listed the potential episodes with some comments. And we can actually talk about some of the ones we wanted to include but couldn't include. The first episode, and we'll go alternate.
Let's keep this as short as we can since we're already at 2 hours and 20 minutes.
And 9. We only wanted 1 2-parter, and it's Year of Hell. Part 1 and 2.
Now, so this was interesting because, you're right. Two-parters really have to earn their place because they, time-wise, are 2 episodes.
They were the bane of the Star Trek marathon, the 2-parters.
Yes, absolutely. And there are many 2-parters in the Voyager canon. And this is the only one that made it because it really is the closest thing I think Voyager has to the best of both worlds.
Well, and Voyager was pretty serial compared to, say, TNG.
Plus, the Year of Hell, actually, in canon, in continuity, Voyager had gotten a warning about the Year of Hell from when Kes came back.
Yeah. And Year of Hell, basically, I mean, to give too much away for people that will be joining us on Netflix Instant, but Year of Hell is cool in that it's like all the worst stuff that could happen. Like, the Voyager is almost completely destroyed, the Dantor skeleton crew. They have a whole year where they're just endlessly, relentlessly pursued by the bad
guys. They're eating, slime mold.
Bent on their destruction. Yeah, I mean, it's just absolute fucking hell.
Right.
Yeah. For a long time.
Okay.
And it's a 2-parter and it's really good. So that was our first lock-in.
Next one is season 4, episode 23, Living Witness.
Yes. Now, as much – this is kind of the opposite. If we said we don't want Neelix or Kes, if it was up to me, I would just do Doctor episodes because I think the Doctor is the best character on Voyager.
Yeah.
So all of my suggestions were the Doctor does this and what about the one that this happens to the Doctor? Yeah. And we had to narrow it down.
The opera singer?
I love that one. It's not in. I did argue for it. But Living Witness is great. The Doctor wakes up far in the future and has to kind of give his account to this civilization in the future of why the Voyager crew were not evil and why their place in history is not merited.
It's like a matter of perspective, or the Riker episode from TNG.
Yeah, it's a good.
It's to be the advocate or whatever.
It's a good. It's a good thinky. It's not a lot of action. It's a lot of ideas, and it's a good Voyager episode.
And it's cool to see the Voyager crew how they're portrayed in that far future.
Yeah,
that Chakotay has the full face tattoo.
Yeah. So that was so that's three. Remember, Year of Hell is 2 episodes. So that's 3 episodes counting forward. The 4th episode.
Do you think Mike Tyson got a face tattoo because he thought Chakotay was cool?
Maybe. No. Chakotay is cool.
I know.
Chakotay is not cool.
Yeah, he is.
No.
Next episode we
ended
picked
up being Boba Fett, right? Or Jango Fett.
No.
Racism.
Oh my goodness.
Racism.
I'm trolling Norm.
They all look alike, right, Will?
I didn't say that.
Season 5, Episode 6, Timeless, which is a favorite episode, directed by LeVar Burton.
He is also in the episode.
This is a great one. In the future, something terrible happened to Voyager. It didn't get home. It's frozen in the ice on some alien planet.
Oh, that one was good.
It's great because the first time you watch it, you have to kind of unravel what happened.
Right, and Chakotay and Harry, years later, have come back to try to unravel time and prevent this disaster.
So it's another time. How many time travel episodes do you have?
Well, there are many. Year of Hell has got temporal shit going on.
Yeah, so it seems like they're almost all time
travel. Later in Voyager got obsessed with the Borg and time travel, and that became the problem.
Yeah.
But not too much of a problem. Now, the next one is my personal favorite episode of Voyager.
It's a good one.
It's Season 5, Episode 20, Think Tank.
Yes. And starring George Costanza leads team of evil alien geniuses.
Yes.
Wow, really? No, I've never seen
this. Voyager gets caught in like an anomaly or whatever. They can't get out of it. They're trapped. And the ship turns up. And along comes George Costanza with alien prosthetics saying, me and my friends, we are a mercenary think tank of basically the smartest people from a bunch of different races. And we lend out our services to you. We'll solve the problem for you that you cannot solve.
Oh, wow.
But they turn out to be evil. And they basically say the price of our services are we want one of your crew members.
No, we want specific technology and also
the smartest of your crew members.
Yeah. And they hide and they steal 7 of 9.
Yeah.
This is kind of a bit.
Is this
like
for nefarious reasons or just, you know, they wanted to, because she's
because she's super smart.
Oh, okay.
And each one of them is like one bizarre alien race and in much the same way as Data.
So it's like Rumpelstiltskin, basically.
Seven's unique. This is an interesting thing I discovered watching Voyager episodes is that so many of them are just rehashed versions of TNG plots.
Well, of course.
True.
It's
like TNG was rehashed.
Think Tank is a big favorite.
The next episode,
well deserved.
Season 6, Episode 10, Pathfinder.
Yes,
it's a Barclay episode.
We like this because
I like Barclay.
Barclay from TNG started to show up in Voyager. Yeah. As a fun character
because he was obsessed with finding Voyager.
Yes. So Barclay's back in Starfleet at Earth, and he's now obsessed because Starfleet know that Voyager's stuck on the other side of the universe, and they're trying to bring him back.
His dad
as well.
Is the admiral,
right,
running the program.
Right.
But hold on, Barclay eventually, they didn't know that Voyager survived at the very beginning.
They initially
right?
thought it was lost, and then they discovered that they were just very far away.
Right.
Yes. And this is after the one episode which we skip, which we'll talk about, where they realize that Voyager was still out there.
Yeah.
Which starts this Pathfinder program, and Barclay, in this episode, he redeems himself. It's great.
They do eventually figure out a way to actually have like real-time conversations, right?
Across sending messages occasionally with an array.
Yep. Yeah.
We'll get to this when we watch it live. So season 6 actually has plenty of episodes. The last two episodes also from season 6. We skipped all of season 7.
Now, this is your
favorite. How many episodes? You went with 8 this time?
8.
Yeah, just
this is my favorite episode of Voyager of all time.
Yeah.
Season 6, episode 12, Blink of an Eye, starring Daniel Day Kim from Lost.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Which one was this?
This is the one where the planet evolves at a much faster rate than Voyager's real time. So they see like a Stone Age civilization evolved to the point where they're firing like space nuclear missiles.
Oh, so it's like the time that Bender got fired off faster than the speed of light. Nobody can catch him.
Voyager is stuck in the on this planet, but they're there only
in the orbit.
In orbit, and they're only there for several weeks or so. But over that time, that planet has gone from
like thousands of years
to more advanced than Voyager.
Yeah, and eventually they're able to detect Voyager, and they're scared of them, and they start firing. And actually, their technology gets to the point where it's actually a threat.
So Voyager becomes part of their civilization mythology. They say it's the spaceship in the skies.
Right. So
the kids talk about.
So Kate Mulgrew is God,
kind of.
And there's a really great scene where the doctor, they send the doctor to the planet, but they miscalculate and they try to retrieve him, and he spent years there. He has a family, and
does he lose his shit?
It's really good.
Okay.
What are we doing?
What is
this happening? It's like the
Doctor's Inner Light. Yeah, right? Totally is the Doctor's Inner
Light. See, everything is lifted from TNG.
I'm excited about this. I haven't seen a lot of these episodes.
One episode left, and this was the one that I pushed the hardest for. Which is the most controversial. It's just all out fun. And this, although this is a silly episode? It's controversial. It's a bit silly, but this is the one I actually got most Twitter replies on. That people said, oh, I hope you
remember
this.
It's the one people remember the most.
I'm glad you saved this for last so I can leave.
This will be the capper. This will be the one to end in. The way that we're doing this is not necessarily the order we're doing it, but I think this should be the last episode.
Season 6,
Episode 15, Sunkatsi.
I don't know what this is.
7 of 9 in Alien Ultimate cage fighting versus The Rock.
Oh my god! Really?
Yes.
Right.
They stop on this planet where they have like these kind of alien warrior cage fighting UFC type octagon matches, and 7 of 9, and I think Harry gets stuck down there.
And she's trained, and The Rock is even the final boss.
Right.
But it's clearly a UPN cross show promo.
Yeah.
When what was the show?
SmackDown was on there for a while.
Yeah. The Rock does his signature moves.
Yeah.
The eyebrow?
He does the eyebrow.
The people's elbow and whatever.
So here's the question. They're in the Delta Quadrant, right?
Yes. Yes. So 70,000 light years from home.
They're portraying the Delta Quadrant as if it was the South. It's like it's like a bunch of kind of hillbilly backwater planets.
This comes
some old school hucksters.
Yes.
I mean, I'm a little offended by this the more I think about it.
This is an extension of the same argument I've always made about Star Trek, which is for all its themes of unity and tolerance,
yeah,
it's actually a pretty racist show.
Well, but only against imaginary races.
Yes, but you know, it's still a racist idea. All the other races can be defined by a single stereotypical and usually unattractive trait and are all ultimately inferior to humans.
Well, George Lucas does the same thing.
Yes.
Is that flying blue Italian alien from Phantom Menace?
Well, I think he was actually supposed to be a Jew. That's what people took so much offense to.
I guess that would be more offensive, yeah.
Yeah.
And then there was, okay.
But, you know, the Ferengi, every Ferengi you meet is greedy.
Yep.
Every Cardassian you meet is evil. Well, every Klingon you meet is a savage.
Yeah, there's only one redeeming one.
One redeemed Cardassian?
Yeah. Garrett or Garrick.
Well, and then Garrick is kind of a bit shadowy.
And then he's still Nog shady. And Worf.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So those are the eight episodes. Feel free to excoriate us for our choices.
I'm going to quickly run down some of the other options. Season 3 episode Q and the Grey. Chloe Civil War and the Q's Continuum.
Yeah, these were the ones that didn't quite make it.
That one was good. I remember
Q and the
Grey is
a lot of fun. Anything with actually, the Voyager did do some very good Q episodes, but we didn't include any.
Q's were there Kid? Q DS9 episodes?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Q's in every Trek apart from the original one.
He has to be.
It's like when they run out of ideas. Let's bring Q back.
Darkling, which is
when
the Doctor becomes possessed by different holodeck personalities, which again is just Moriarty Star Trek episode.
Yep. That's bad.
Okay, this is one. Message in a Bottle. You wrote.
Oh, yeah. Now, this was funny because I wrote, because this is the one where the Romulans get on the ship.
How's that happen?
And the Doctor's the only one that can kind of defend the ship.
It's also, and the ship's in the Alpha Quadrant because they send the Doctor.
And I was excited about the idea, and then Norm had to remind me, dude, don't forget that's the episode that Andy Dick is in because he plays the other EMH.
Yep.
I immediately
Dick
struck
episode.
It off the list.
Yeah, yep. No Andy Dick.
I wasn't happy about that.
Andy Dick was fine. News Radio.
In the Flash.
So this is where Species 8472
created a
fake Starfleet.
So
kind of like the Russian towns.
Yeah, exactly.
So they can infiltrate Starfleet.
And has the Gardener.
Yeah, has Boothby.
Oh, okay.
Bride of Chaotica. It's the
I didn't like that.
The black and white episode.
You know, Tom Paris set up that black and white holodeck simulation where he basically played Flash Gordon.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
And they did these 50s throwback kind of pastiches. It wasn't good.
Okay.
Relativity, seven assists.
Can we at this point just say that holodeck episodes are never good?
No, there's a reason they call it the plot device.
Right. Right. I mean, the one where the holodeck broke loose, that one was okay.
No, in
Sherlock
Holmes.
Let me tell you something. Any technology.
Oh, no, that was a Moriarty episode.
Any technology that is that powerful and that dangerous and which malfunctions as often as it did would have been banned from the Federation decades ago.
Right. Yeah. How come it's
the holodeck's
so easy
only interesting when it breaks?
Security, like the safety protocols.
Yes.
So easy.
Why do you even have that as a feature? Why is that a feature?
Safety protocols.
The safety protocols?
Yeah. Why can you just say holodeck disengage safety protocols?
Well, because you might want a more thrilling experience.
No. They don't serve real booze in the bar.
Right. Exactly.
They're not going to have a fucking holodeck thing where you can die.
And the best that Voyager can come up with for a thrilling experience is a country town.
The Irish town that they invented was just so awful. And then you got the Kazon.
They just wanted a taste of
the
home,
Nazi
dude.
Oh, no, that was
the World War II episode.
Not the Kazons, but the Hirogen.
Hirogen. Oh, the ones that are totally into war. Yeah.
Okay, wrap up that last few.
Relativity, seven is this time cop fraction. Seven flies through different, goes through different time periods in Voyager on a mission, and she meets the adult version of Icheb and Naomi Hunter.
What about the one with the Delta Flyer race?
That was on my list. So there were two left. These are the two that I was very passionate about but didn't go in.
Quickly.
One is Warhead, where the Doctor's program gets hijacked by a sentient bomb who takes control of Voyager and decides that the Voyager is going to become this kamikaze bomb.
Okay.
Because it's like a bomb left over from an ancient war, but it's still programmed to complete its mission.
So it's like the Harkonnens from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Kinda, I guess. I think the Harkonnens are from Dune, aren't they?
No. I'm thinking about the guys that set up on Pluto in the bad ones. The Worf, and it doesn't matter. The ones that get inhaled by the dog.
And the final, and the, oh no, the Vlahergs and the Gugufrins.
Vlahergs and the Gugufrins,
And the final episode was the one you mentioned. This I personally would have been neck and neck with Sunkatsi. Sunkatsi ultimately was more popular, but Drive, where they, they're having some R&R and they enter the Delafly in a space race.
Did not like that
it's
one.
It's just fun.
It's like the Kessel Run in 9 parsecs?
Basically.
Okay.
It's just a good old-fashioned like, rally race.
I don't like the Flyer idea.
I never liked the Delaflyer.
Yeah.
Is it like Cannonball Run? Is it like, is Dom Dooley's there?
I mean, that's kind of what it's meant to be, like a mad, like a wacky races.
Yeah,
in
yeah, I like wacky races.
Yeah, that's yeah. basically what it is.
So it's a lot of the Voyager things, we actually have no Bork episodes.
Wow, really?
We yep. have no, well, apart from anything with 7 or 9, right. but we don't have like Scorpion or Raven or any of the yep. big ones. We don't have, we didn't do Endgame even though.
Well, a lot of the Bork episodes were 2 episodes too. They were doubles.
We didn't do one of the 2-parter ones I kind of wanted to do was the Ed Begley Jr. in 20th Century.
Fuck Ed Begley Jr.
I hate that shit.
That was the first appearance of the portable hull emitter.
Because, for, you know, story wise, they realized that they needed the doctor locked into the
best character only being able to be in the
medical.
They needed
to move him around the ship, yeah. so they came up with the mobile emitter. And the other one I was sorry to leave was Course Oblivion, where Paris and Torres, it's basically their version of Firefly's out of gas. Right, where they're running out of air and, you know, they yeah. have the little space helmet kiss. It's a nice episode, but
aww.
We had to make some – we didn't think it was going to be that difficult to make cuts because you think, well, how many good Voyager episodes are there? It turns out there actually are some.
Well, yeah, we ran for like 6 years, right? 5 years?
7 years.
Seven seasons.
Wow. All the Star Trek TNG
so that's
seven seasons. Went 7 seasons, except for Enterprise, of course.
And I like Chakotay. Fuck you. I don't care what you say. Chakotay's
pretty
cool. Yeah,
Chakotay's cool.
He's, I all got spirit, no he's all spiritual and shit. He goes on vision quests.
I got. That's racist.
How is that, right? Is no, that racist?
The thing is, it's true. He went on a space vision quest.
Well, what's interesting is it's actually a Hispanic actor, but they have him playing a Native American.
That's racist.